Coming to you live from the destroyed ruins of the Ontario sector, otherwise known as Tokyo, it's another episode of Macross Speaker Podcast. Listen to our rants, folks. This is Gwyn Campbell, also known on the boards as Torchiro, and with me once again we have
Adrian Lozano, known as Save,
and
Wanzer Fan.
Get out!
Sorry. I'm Renato.
And a bit of a change in the lineup today. With us for the first time, having come fresh out of our podcast simulator at the back with 25 "You've Been Shot Down" signs around his neck, is
Richard, known as Goobaba.
Goobaba from the forums. How did you end up lucky enough to get the name of Goobaba on the? Because it's the first thing I've thought of when I joined up. I think it's going to be the first thing everyone thinks of.
I don't know. I think there's a Goobaba that was already there.
Yeah.
That sounds like a Japanese user.
And but I always thought of it as Goobaba just because that, even though the Anime Central subs have it as Goobaba.
Yeah.
I always thought it was Goobaba because that sounds like more like something a 5-year-old girl would think of.
Yeah, with 6 months of Japanese under my belt in my first year of university, even I knew it was Goobaba.
Okay.
Did you know it was not a Japanese word?
Yes.
Oh.
They wrote it in katakana in the books.
Hmm.
Okay.
Anyway, so Richard, since it's your first time here, we're here to pop your Macross cherry.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your history with Macross. How did you get into it? Why are you here?
It started in before Christmas of 84. There was Los Angeles Times had a magazine, and they had an article about robot toys, Japanese robot toys, and they showed a Valkyrie in it, and they gave an incredibly inaccurate synopsis of Macross. And then when...
How inaccurate? It wasn't like those pictures on SF Magazine of the Yamato with the wave motion cannon being the actual launch hangar.
No, it was... If I remember correctly, it was that aliens attack the Earth and people on Earth just happen to have planes that turn into robots to fight them.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, when Robotech... started, my first thought was, wow, this is Macross. So it was a little bit of a shock about 6 weeks later when suddenly it changed.
Okay. And so that was your first experience with Macross, and then how did things develop from there? I mean, how did you sink to the depths that you are now A, in Tokyo, and B, on a Macross podcast?
When Macross, I got the Do You Remember Love, like, on a copy of a copy of a copy of a videotape in 85, and I loved it. Flashback 2012 came a couple years later.
Mm-hmm.
Macross 2 I didn't like, and then I thought I was
done. I'm holding Adrian back.
I'm sorry.
You didn't like?
I didn't like.
You didn't like what? You didn't like the story? That's fine, but there's other things in there that you can like.
Yeah. I don't know. I just found it kind of dull.
Found it pretty badass is what I found it.
Bullshit. Stop thinking you know anything about culture.
Okay. I don't... People like it? That's great. So Macross Plus came out and I didn't want to touch it because I didn't like Macross 2, and the guy at my video store was like, well, look, here, rent it. If you don't like it, I'll refund your money.
Hmm.
And so I came back the next day and I bought it.
I think the whole thing with Macross Plus, you know, that first scene where you see Isamu with a giant Crocodile Dundee knife on the end of his gun, and he just skewers the cockpit, and there's blood coming out. I was like, now, unfortunately, there wasn't much more of that in the show.
There needed to be way more of that.
Yeah, but there's a branch of fans that don't like robots with knives. So
they're not Evangelion fans, is what you're telling me.
That's robots with box cutters. There's a difference.
Okay, so you liked Plus.
Yeah. And then I ended up going to the video store in Little Tokyo in Los Angeles.
J-Wave
and the other one, which I can't remember the name of right now, and renting Macross 7 and watching it all raw.
Yeah.
Which didn't thrill me at first, but I've become extraordinarily uncritical of Macross. Pretty much everything, I find something to like in it. Even Macross 2 now.
See? Comes out.
Yeah. Hang on. What is it?
Well, yeah, what is it? I was about to say that. What is it that's good about Macross 2?
Ishtar with long hair and Sylvie's freckles.
Oh, that's good. That's good. That's good. You got to pass.
All right. You're allowed to stay in that couch.
Thank you. Right. Thank you.
So, last episode, we talked mostly about The Wings of Farewell. We talked briefly about the first movie as well. So, relatively briefly, can you, and as relatively spoiler-free, I suppose, for the second movie, can you give us your impressions, thoughts on the two movies? I mean, did you like, what didn't you like? Are they worth it?
Well, unlike all of you, I was not in Tokyo when the first movie came out.
That's
so
right.
I didn't end up seeing it until the DVD came out.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was good. I didn't think it was spectacular. Some of the scenes, the Universal Bunny scene I thought was great. The ending battle I thought was great.
Who doesn't think that the Universal Bunny scene is great?
A few people.
I'm sorry, Renato, I didn't see you in the corner.
that was okay.
But it did not prepare me for the second movie, which just blew me away. I mean, I was, by about two-thirds of the way through the movie, I was not even thinking anymore. It was just kind of letting it wash over me.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty incredible.
Okay. No, that's pretty succinct and
yeah. It finally brought back that WTF factor that was one of the reasons I got into anime to begin with.
No, you make a good point. Since the last podcast, which was, you know, a few months ago now, I mean, I've seen it another two times, so I'm at like six viewings at the moment.
Six and a half, quarter, something like that.
I've only seen it three times.
But I took a friend who works for a video game company, and one thing he had worked on in the past, which I won't go into any detail on, was a Macross game.
Oh.
And so when he was younger, he was a big fan. But I've been the one who got him into Frontier. And, you know, he didn't mind he hadn't seen the first movie either. So I said, look, I'm going to take you to see the second movie. We'll go on the first of the month, so it's only 1,000 yen. So you can't bitch to me that I'm taking you to see anime in the cinema. But you come to my place the night before, and, yeah, after making out or whatever, we watch the first movie.
We have a Bobby fan.
No, I just want all the hot, juicy details on the Macross game. I said, look, we're going to watch the first movie, and then the next night we'll go out and see the second movie. And he saw the first movie, and he was like, wow, because he hadn't watched the TV series since broadcast. And he's like, yeah, they did quite a bit different. It was entertaining enough, because he wasn't remembering all the details from the TV series. And then the next night, you know, went to see the second movie, which made everything worthwhile, because he came out of that cinema, and he was just absolutely blown away. He's like, more than Macross, that was entertainment. I completely lost track of time. And for that, he's like, he had no idea. He thought, you know, anime movie, there'd be certain pandering elements, there'd be certain elements, you just, relationship crap. It's like, no, it just flowed.
My friend Emery was the same way. I mean, she hadn't seen the first movie. She loved the series when it came out. So I showed her the first movie.
Right.
And she thought it was pretty good. And then we went to see the second movie with Renato at Ikebukuro. And, yeah, she loved it. She really loved it.
Hmm. It's interesting, because there's another friend of mine who I will not mention on this podcast, but, he took a friend to see it, and they both... They wanted to love it, but they couldn't get past the jumping the shark moments.
The whole thing is jumping the shark.
To the point that the
jumping
of the shark ruined the entire movie for him. Okay. And I was just like, that's not the mindset. As I said last cast, I can put up with stupid if it's very cool stupid, which is cool.
Yeah.
If it's stupid, no.
Well, I don't think I'm going too much into spoiler territory here, but there's a misguided Macross fan or Robotech fan.
That big palooka seems to have formed a permanent attachment to you guys.
Fan that I talked to, who she's a really big Zentradi fan. She calls mm-hmm. herself a Zentard.
Zentard?
Zentard. She's retarded for the Zentradi.
That's up there with Narutard.
And so she doesn't really like where the Macross franchise has gone because it doesn't treat the Zentradi with enough respect for her.
It's gone gangbusters. You hear that? Gangbusters.
Gangbusters.
It's gangbusters.
So she was, she saw some pictures from the second movie and she was like, sexy nurse Cheryl? Really? How cliche. And after seeing it, I told her, it's not just a sexy nurse. It's a sexy nurse, mad scientist.
Attack! Kahen Sentouki. Valkyrie による real な SF mecha action に、アイドルとの三角関係の恋愛を取り入れ、さらに人類の敵である異星人の前でラブソングを歌う。
Yeah.
Nanase, best character ever.
You're not a breast man, are you?
I'm not either. I just like Nanase.
Why choose? Is my question. But before we move on to the news, there's a few bits and pieces doing the rounds. Just out of curiosity, Richard, what brings you to Japan?
Many things.
Because you mentioned that you weren't here when the first movie
right.
came out.
I've been actually trying to come here for a while, and I ended up having the misfortune to arrive looking for a job in November of 2007, a week after Nova, the largest English school in Japan, collapsed.
Oh, that was a big one.
So every job I was applying for had 5,000 other people applying for it. So, yeah, I've been here a bunch of times, and every time it's just kind of like, I need to move here. Although I think this time it may have been a little bit bad timing.
Yeah, I still have one of those big, huge, stuffed Nova bunnies. I wonder if it's going to be a collector's item one day.
Do you still have that as well?
No, it was a Valentine's Day present.
He's too good for the Eikaiwa.
I tried to avoid it. Yeah.
I thought those would be free or something. So you got the Valentine's gift.
No, they had a whole merchandising range. They was making a lot of money from merchandise, Nova was, because they had all the Nova Bunny TV commercials. They were even playing them on the JR line. And they made all this merchandise. And no, they were, like, available in stores.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. But okay, should we just touch, like, briefly on what we're all doing here? Because we skipped completely over this last week.
Did we?
Yeah, so just in a minute. What are you doing here, Renato?
In a minute? Okay, well,
I know you too well.
Yeah. He's giving lectures on space elevators using Orgus.
Yeah, okay.
No, that's true.
That is true, right.
Oh, come on!
Oh, my God. I've been here several times. My first time living here was in 2001, where I was living as an exchange student at ICU
mm-hmm.
University.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went back to finish my degree in Japanese studies, and of course, as soon as I finished that, I wanted to come back here as soon as I could. But I ended up doing 1 year of just weird odd jobs here and there, and then I did some courses in Nagasaki for simultaneous interpretation and translation and whatever.
That's a bad job.
Yeah. But it was really fun and really stimulating. I was just taking the courses, right?
It's got a weird definition of fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did a training course on that once, and they're like, here's a 2-page extract on World War II. Simultaneous interpretation. Go.
It's like, yeah. That's what it's like. But, I like a challenge. I always fail them, but I like them.
Like transforming your new fire
without
breaking it.
Yes. Well, living in Japan is a challenge that everyone has to face every day, right?
Yeah.
Once that was done, I was back in the UK again for a while, and I tried all sorts of different things to try and get myself back here again.
Mm.
And the one that I lucked out with was a postgrad course in sociology. Because I'd had an interest in Japanese society for a long time.
Okay.
So I started in Osaka University for 1 year, and then I was in Kyoto University for 5 years. And last year I got a job in Meiji University, so I moved here.
That's
and
moving up the ranks. That's high class stuff.
Mm.
Yeah. Well.
And he works right
next.
Near where I live.
Right, right. So every so often on the weekends we just hang out. I finish quite early on Fridays, so we hang out and talk about Robotech, really.
Was that old sourpuss, Roy?
Seriously,
not
it
all
is.
The time.
Well, it's not about how Robotech is exciting and so important in our lives, but it's more about...
well, you know what they say, when expats get together, they tend to bitch about things.
That's true.
And if you're going to bitch about something, Robotech...
She might panic if she sees that.
...is a fine topic of
it's
choice.
A never-ending well of swill.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Adrian, you want to... And that was more than a minute.
I know.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, there's no way I could...
Well, I mean, he's got a long list. For me, it was just... before getting into moving to Tokyo, I was working for a animation school based in Santa Monica, California, who happened to be owned by a Japanese company. And they ended up hiring me on to teach 3D animation and doing administration staff. And they eventually closed that office... because after 9/11, all these student visa issues came into play, and most of our students were Japanese, and most of the students were ditching their English classes, and just taking the digital classes, and because parents, well, like how everybody fled the country here during the earthquake, when 9/11 was hit, all the Japanese families didn't want their kids studying abroad, so we tanked, and 2005, they closed the school, and because of my interest in Japanese animation and my history with working in animation, they offered me a job transfer to their new university in Akihabara.
Right.
So I've been working in Akihabara since 2005. And around 2009, they started losing money again, cutting, and then I got cut. So I finished off another year there. And then in the last year, I kind of just... got into the hobby and toy industry, and then just working on a couple projects that's keeping me going right now.
Wow, that's quite the epic.
Well,
first of all, I've got to make a slight correction. It was an earthquake. That was the omnidirectional barrier.
Captain, it's going to explode now!
Screwing up. That messed Tokyo up, just so everyone knows.
Yeah.
But now, speaking for myself, I mean, my first ever trip to Japan was in 93. When I was in like senior high, first year of senior high, and that completely had a huge impact on me. I didn't understand a word of the language. I just knew I wanted to come back, so I picked up Japanese in university and came out in 2000 as an exchange student, and I went back in 2001 to Australia to graduate, which was possibly the most boring year of my life because I'd done a year in Japan. I didn't want to go back to graduate. So I was just getting everything knocked out of the way. It was a terrible
year.
Exactly
the same thing for me.
It was a terrible year. I mean, I had to get enough points up to graduate. And I had one time slot and enough, and I had to do one elective, and the only thing open was feminist studies. That was the kind of year it was. So anyway, 2002 rolls around, I moved back, and have been here ever since. So I've lived in Hakodate, I've lived in Saitama, I've lived in Gunma. And I've been in Tokyo now for, 5 years, I think?
How come you never got in touch?
What?
How come you never got in touch?
Got in touch.
Because you've been on the forums for a long time as well, right?
Well, I've only been in Tokyo for five, 6 years. So
yeah, but I haven't been in Tokyo for like, more than 1 year.
Well, I mean...
apart from the 10 years...
I'll admit, before I was in Tokyo, I mean, there are a lot of events I didn't even know were on. I mean, I met you once, Adrian, at a Megazone.
We didn't meet.
Well,
we were
I saw
just in
you.
The same place.
Yeah, we were in the same place. And that was 2005, 4, 6?
That had been 2000.
That was like the year before I moved.
Was that the 23rd anniversary thing?
Yeah, that was the 23rd anniversary at Shinjuku.
At Loft
well,
Plus One.
So that would have been
2008.
Yeah.
No, because in that case, it must be a different event. I'd seen you around, though. But either way, there's a lot of events on. I had no idea that they existed. Otherwise, I would have come down for the. I would have been here for the. Well, even I was in Tokyo at first, I didn't know that there was the 2007 Firebomber thing concert on that made it to DVD. I didn't know that Fukuyama did a concert in 2005. I just wasn't in the information.
So this is it. You've just been making up for lost time.
Pretty much, you know. And
that explains
this.
Yeah.
No, well, look, I've got this kind of philosophy, which I've kind of said before, but I'll throw it out there again, and that is you know, in this day and age, there are very few things that cannot be pirated, for better or for worse. You'll have people doing scanlations, you've got people with fan subs, you've got people who aren't even willing to throw out the price of a CD to support a franchise. One of the few things that can't be bootlegged is an experience.
A live performance, yeah.
So that was half of my motivation towards, you know, behind doing event reviews. But then there was a review up on an old site called Anime EX.
Oh, God. That's
and it turns out it was an event review of the 15th.
Yeah.
It was a review of the 15th anniversary concert. Yeah, the One Night Stand. And it was written by Egan
Liu.
Liu.
Really?
Yep.
From ANN. And I spoke to Egan about that recently. Yeah, he was kind of blown away that I remembered it. And that article is still around.
I printed out when it was new. And I still have it somewhere.
I want to actually put that up on
Mac. I used to print out stuff, you know? I want to
rescue
it. So I can read it at home.
I want to rescue that article, put it up on Macross World, because it's the only English language eyewitness account of the event. And I was like, wow, there are so many of these events that get no English coverage, so anything I can go to, no matter how mundane, you know, Kawamori blew his nose today, I will throw up there. So that's my story. Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was actually looking at EX yesterday. It hasn't been updated in about 10 years.
No, it hasn't.
It's done.
But it was a really, really, really good site.
I have to say, it was like,
well done.
The last
to,
issue was
like
a Christmas present
Scott
gift
Fraser
guide or something, right?
Elton.
Hmm? The cover page for the last issue was like a Christmas,
yeah, Christmas
gift
something,
guide.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah,
it's still online. It's just,
and the last,
it's archived. Yeah.
The last
yeah.
review that they did was Cowboy Bebop knocking on Hammer's door, I think.
Yeah.
Oh god, was that like the Anime Expo screening of it?
Yes,
like
it was. Yeah.
Oh god, yeah.
It
the
kind
Long
of
Beach.
It ended before the bubble burst in Western anime fandom and the scourge of.
It wasn't actually home.
Of the Moe Apocalypse.
It wasn't.
Happened.
It was in Tokyo.
Oh really? Okay.
Yeah.
It was before the Moe Apocalypse. So.
Well, that was in around 2004-5, something like that.
Yeah. It ended on a high note, but anyway, yeah. News, gentlemen. There's been a few bits and pieces making the rounds.
Mostly about endings.
And as we said last podcast, you know, the current Macross boom is dwindling down to an end now that the second movie's out. My prediction is they will stretch out the current popularity as much as they can to the end of the year. There'll be a Blu-ray release, possibly another game. I wouldn't be surprised if they finally did that PlayStation 3 game.
Pachinko Machine just started.
Oh, yeah.
And then next year, being the 30th anniversary, it'll ramp back up again.
Yeah.
But then after next year, then that'll be, it's going to go into hibernation as it did. Like between Zero and Frontier, there were quite a few years there which were nothing.
Right.
Having said that, I was here when Zero came out, and there was nothing when Zero did come out. There's hardly
before Zero came out, that was nothing.
Yeah, true.
But
late 90s.
Afterwards, we had some sporadic stuff. It wasn't that bad.
But you know what I mean? Like the franchise definitely comes and goes in waves, yeah. as opposed to Gundam, which is constant.
Right.
Yeah.
Constantly bad.
So
that's another podcast. Yeah.
This is a podcast. You leave the podcast.
I have to say, I'm much more relaxed now than I am the last time we did a podcast, because that was my Gundam weekend.
Oh,
my
God.
Head was pounding, man. It was terrible.
You guys watch all three Gundam movies in a row?
I did.
See, I would never recommend that to anyone.
I do.
Yeah.
I
wish you
would
have told me
four.
That. Like,
you include Shell's Counterattack. I do it before bed once a week.
No, I've sat through one and two.
Okay.
Yeah, it's stupid. Just stupid.
I love the original Gundam. I love the original Gundam, but I wouldn't watch the three movies in a marathon.
Well, even if Tomino stepped outside and told you how much of an idiot you are at the end, because that's what happened to mine.
That might convince
literally.
Me.
Literally.
So, out of curiosity, Unicorn, have you watched any of Gundam?
Oh, I love Gundam Unicorn.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
I like Gundam Unicorn as well.
Unicorn is great.
And Renato hasn't even seen, like, the original series. For me, it's like, I loved, Zeta was what I got into.
Ooh.
I got into that when Zeta was ending and Double Zeta was starting.
Mm-hmm.
So, way back in the day. And so, Unicorn for me is just like, you know, it's made for people like me.
Yeah,
it's like cracking open a really well-aged bottle of something. It's just
that's
got
true.
That timeless quality to it.
But it's not that much for the story for me. It's more about a kind of realization that Japanese animation still has some life left in it.
You know what I mean? Oh, that's a fucking exaggeration.
Because,
oh my god.
Because the animation in that, especially the character animation, like, I don't even have to talk about the mechanical action or anything like that. The expressions and all that, it's all done really, really well. The designs are all done magnificently. And it gives me hope that there is still a company that is trying to make...
So things like the upcoming new season of Last Exile or the new Blood Plus or Blood Sea, none of that excites you at all?
None of that excites me at all.
Well, hang on, look, just...
I don't know what you're talking about either.
Sit on your sit on your porch on that rocking chair for a moment.
Yeah. I'm going to be here in a
while. News. So the point of this with the Macross coming and going in waves is that ANN was reporting that Macross the First is going to be published in a different manga magazine.
Yeah.
On a they didn't say on what kind of basis, but there are a number of titles going to it.
I think it's going to be quarterly.
Quarterly?
Yeah.
So the question is now that if, you know, is there a precedent for a manga being published in two quarterly magazines? I don't think there is.
No.
So if it's there, it means Macross Ace has probably lost it.
Right.
Which could potentially mean the end of Macross Ace.
Well, look, Gundam Ace, and Macross Ace is a spin-off of Gundam Ace.
It is.
Yeah.
And Gundam Ace has had a number of... Gundam Ace itself is a spin-off of Shonen Ace.
Mm-hmm.
But it's had its own spin-offs for quite a while now. Zeta Gundam Ace came out. There were three issues made quarterly.
Wow.
And then they just recently did...
What year was that, by the way?
Zeta Gundam Ace? It was when the movies came out. It was when the Zeta Gundam movies came out.
Three, four years ago?
Something like that.
Because interesting, because they've just announced they're doing Zeta the First, like they've done with Gundam.
Oh, yeah,
Gundam
yeah.
Gundam
the Origin is ending, I think, next issue. And
it's a great
manga. Kitazume, Hiroyuki Kitazume is doing a Zeta Gundam.
Right.
They had the name, but I can't remember what it was. But a Zeta Gundam manga in its place. And last fall, they came out with Gundam Unicorn Ace. And they came out with Gundam 00 Ace.
One of these two things is quality.
Yes.
The other is not.
Right. So Macross Ace, it's very much, I think, in that mold as a spin-off of Gundam Ace. So the fact that it's lasted 8 issues, you know, is pretty good. But at the same time, unlike Zeta Gundam Ace, they actually have continuing stories.
Rick.
But you know what? You know one thing that always pissed me off about Robotech?
Women her age can get awful mean, you know.
When they take some translation which is accurate, and then they kind of misquote it as a mistranslation. Like, for example, I'll give you a really good example.
Please.
In episode... Which is the one where the first transformation happens?
Transformation.
Number five.
Transformation, okay. I believe it's called.
Yes, well, it was probably called fucking Minmay Goes Out for the Day.
I know which what you're going to say, where she says, well, you said you wanted to destroy the town, but...
How
they,
do you like it? And then
but
Rick
they,
says...
He never actually said that in that scene.
Yeah, so Rick should have just said, no, that was Macross. I didn't actually say that.
It's like,
this is Robotech, hello.
It's like, Minmay, honey, you've got your continuities mixed up.
Yeah.
And then Sylvia... No, yeah. no, that's what surprises me about Macross Ace. I mean, 8 issues is good. I was hoping we'd get at least to 10. They may have enough in the you know, backed up to get to 10. But more than that, if we do follow this typical wave for the franchise and they stretch it out just over this year, and then next year there's another bit of a boom because of the anniversary, it would have made sense to have done anything they could to keep the magazine going just for another 6 months until the 30th anniversary hits.
I would say the whole magazine is just an afterthought.
Yeah.
And this is coming from someone who likes it in general.
Yeah,
I do too, and I really like it. I get two of every issue.
Same here.
But I can't enjoy it as much as I'd like to.
I mean, the problem is that it is. You know when you were describing Gundam, what, Zeta Gundam Ace, was it?
Mm.
I mean, those were basically just there to promote the new movies.
Right.
This is just here to promote Frontier. And I think someone just said, well, Frontier's over, let's pull the plug on this one.
Yeah, I mean,
it sounds like
I don't think you're wrong. But for me personally, of course Macross First is the highlight of it. That's what I get it for. But,
yeah, that's what I get.
But the magazine is this this meeting point of everything Macross.
Right.
Yeah. It's not only the other spin-off manga, which are of, you know, variable quality, but you've got these full page color spreads on new figures, on new Vaux. You've got concert
all
reports.
All the ads are Macross ads.
You've got stuff for the new games, event reviews, which don't make it to new type or anything else.
Yes.
And
yeah,
so the fact that it was this, it was basically what's going on now. Macross is popular, it's living.
Yeah.
And there's still a lot of stuff going on this year.
Right. So I like the idea, and I like the concept, and I want to support it.
Yeah,
and I really think that they're wasting a really good opportunity here.
Yeah,
and one other thing that I was going to complain about, but it doesn't matter.
Well, I mean,
you said you had nothing to talk about.
Having said that, this is all, you know,
like
conjecture,
right?
But
I think it's pretty strong conjecture.
But the ad was official, wasn't it?
Yeah, no. The latest issue of Gundam Ace does have like an ad for the new Kadokawa magazine. It doesn't have a name yet. And it said it's got all of these anime adaptations, and then in a little box in the corner it says, and Macross the First.
And that's what gets me, because the way they advertised it, they had like these triangular slices coming down the page.
Yeah.
We've got the Blood Sea, we've got this, we've got this. And then the Macross thing was just this text in the bottom. Oh, and we've got Macross the First as well. So I was like, hang on, why isn't it on the same level as these other things? Is it a reprint?
Right, that's what I was going to say. Yeah.
That's the first thing that jumped to mind to me.
They could do that, yeah.
It will be interesting.
If Macross Ace does go, I'll miss the interviews more than anything.
Some of the interviews, yeah. That the big Itano interview.
Yeah.
I'll miss the gag manga. The the original Macross gag manga.
The
Zentra
Ball.
Definitely.
I
won't miss their terrible... Well,
the Macross Plus.
Some of the posters. The Tenjin calendar was awesome, but some of the other posters, like the artwork on them, has been pretty crappy.
Mm.
Yeah.
But anyway... Another thing that's
Secret
Visions,
I thought. I still think Macross F Secret Visions had real potential. Although
it's coming soon though. It's coming soon.
It's coming soon?
I don't know.
No. Yeah. It's
2 years on now.
Right, yeah, it vanished for a while, but it was like, yeah, the first few episodes were just like, okay, let's put Cheryl and Ronka in a bath and have Alto stumble in on them, or let's have sound boosters rip off Cheryl's clothes.
So it's like Tenchi Macross.
But then, like, they introduced a major character in the last one, and it was like, wow, this is actually, it seems like it's going places, and then it just disappeared for a year.
Right.
I'm counting.
Well, speaking of things that have disappeared, a lot of the recent publications for Macross to time the movie have gone surprisingly out of print. We'll get to that. You know, in particular, the three that come to mind, there was a recent issue of Cut magazine, and Cut is like an interview magazine, like they interview film stars. Normally they have something like Johnny Depp on the cover, or they'll have Kimitaku on the cover,
it's
something like that.
Most of the articles are usually like translations of Empire magazine.
That's the kind of magazine it is. And it had Frontier on the cover for the most recent issue. And I know among the Japanese fan community, everyone knew about it, and they were saying, we're going to go buy it. The day, 2 days after it came out, I could not find a local bookstore near my place that had it. Now, granted, that's just near my place. And also, Amazon sold out. And
I had it in my hand, and I didn't realize it was rare, so I didn't buy it.
I ended up finding a tiny bookshop with one very heavily read issue sitting there, so I got that. But that went out, the book for the movie, which you've got a copy of there. Which
yes,
is,
it's mine.
Is normally great value at, what, 1,500 yen?
1,500 yen, and it's an amazingly it's amazingly full book.
It's called the Official Complete Book, Gekijougan Macross F.
So that
like
would be official and complete.
And book.
And book.
All in one.
Wow, that's a deal. So how much would you expect to pay? But 1,500 yen is huge.
Yeah.
And that, on Amazon, last I checked, was going secondhand for 9,000 yen.
And yeah. I was in Mandarake,
or
big
as you would say,
anime.
$1,000.
Right. I was in Mandarake, the big anime store, like, but the one in Shibuya, which is smaller, the other day, and I saw one for, like, twice the price. It was, like, right. 3,100
mm-hmm.
yen, which, still...
It's still a deal compared to...
It's still pretty much a deal.
Yeah,
9,000 yen is way too much for it. Well, don't pay it, anyone.
Even the second Cheryl Gnome illustration book.
I bought that too.
That's gone on Amazon as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I normally order these things in advance. In this case, I didn't, because I thought, well, there's been such a huge coverage of the second movie, I'll just pop down to my local animes and pick them up. Silly me. I can still pick up the books from the first movie, but right. nothing for the second movie.
Well, this is my problem with Nankuret Volume 3.
Right.
I can't find that anywhere.
And that's the one we talked about in the forums.
I guess because...
The Creator's Magazine. Creator's
right.
File.
I guess because there's just been many more avenues from which to get the first two volumes.
Mm-hmm.
Remember they had, for quite a while, a Macross Frontier shop in Akihabara.
Right.
Well, that keeps coming and going.
Well, next time it comes up, they might have Volume 3.
Right.
But that was
right.
before Volume 3 came out.
But
so
yeah, that's where I bought 1 and 2. We were all together that.
Yeah.
That was the Mikimoto day, right?
Yeah, that was when we went to the Frontier shop, and there was the big picture of Cheryl and Ronka, and Renato decided to right all the wrongs and held up a Minmay poster.
Oh, yeah, I've got that
face.
Picture.
It wasn't
yeah,
a poster,
yeah,
it was an actual... carded board.
Sorry.
Made out of wood.
Sorry. Carded board made out of wood.
Okay. Speechless. But yeah, if nothing else, it's proof that the series, well, the IP, still has a huge amount of popularity and makes the potential decision to move Macross the First to a different magazine all the more
ridiculous.
Right.
Yeah. Now, since the last cast, at which point we mentioned the soundtrack of the second movie several times, but the actual album had not come out. That album's now been out for months. End of Triangle.
End of Triangle.
Now it ranked number 9 in the Oricon charts, which is like what the Billboard charts.
Yeah,
here,
that's,
I suppose.
That's pretty amazing.
The earlier Macross Frontier soundtracks were rather unique in that they charted really high.
Right.
In the Oricon charts,
like at 3 or 4.
Pretty much every major OST for Frontier charted. And I have to make it clear, this is your regular mainstream musical chart. This is not your anime music charts.
Right.
The last time an anime soundtrack made into that top 10, including
End of Evangelion.
Including Ghibli movies, was Evangelion. Yeah.
Right.
And that was a good decade ago. More.
Right.
So it was quite the achievement.
Macross 7 did chart quite highly.
Really?
I must add. Yes.
Okay.
And can I say also that
no.
back then, though, CD sales actually meant something. CDs don't sell that much in general today, and so that's
they
why
still
most
sell
of
a
them,
fair bit in Japan, though.
Yeah, but most of them are AKB and other stuff like that. So
only
that's
if you buy 5,500 copies for
which
one
they
person.
Do. Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
But Japan is still a very physical media focused consumer market
for now. Yeah.
For now, and that's what I love about it. I can still buy. Nothing frustrates me more than finding an artist I like online and not being able to get a physical copy of their CD. It really, really bugs me. That's what I love about Japan. I mean, Renato, when you brainwashed me into getting the latest Fukuyama album, I walked out of my apartment, down to Animate, picked it off the shelf, came home.
Yeah.
But so yeah, the newest soundtrack only ranked in at number 9, but that's still quite an achievement. But
right.
Gentlemen,
good,
thoughts? Because
yeah,
I know last cast, everyone's like, oh, the soundtrack for the first movie was so much better. And I've said this on the boards, I put this out here, I believe the soundtrack for the first movie, the Universal Bunny album, is a better album, but the soundtrack to the second movie is a better soundtrack. Thoughts?
I'd have to agree.
Yeah.
I mean...
God damn it, you guys are no fun.
Renato hasn't spoken yet.
Renato speaks.
He's filling his chest up with air. So, no.
I thought that was his head.
There you go.
Well, okay. You go back to, like, the old Star Wars movies, right? And the old Star Wars soundtracks, when you hear the John Williams music and you've seen the movie, you know, in your head, you see the scene that's going on with the music at the exact same time.
Right.
You know, when Vader does this, or Luke does that, or the ship blows up, or whatever. So, the new movie, you have to see the new movie for a lot of those songs to have an effect on you.
So, yeah, every time you hear a little weep in the Nijiro Kumakuma,
exactly,
Open Ranka song, it's like something is happening on the screen.
So, they go hand in hand. And especially towards the end, where the Sayonara no Tsubasa song is...
Yeah.
I mean, granted, it does sound like an intro to Bleach, that guitar in the beginning.
I warned you, I'm going to hit you over the head with this microphone
if you say that again. It does, and you know it. But when it gets past that, you know, when it goes into the, like, you know, just the background music and stuff, that's when, like, the dogfight's going on and things are happening, and it goes back to them singing, which is actually what's going on the screen, opposed to just a bunch of clockmen running around and dancing and falling, and, you know, Cheryl doing this weird thing with her arms up and down. Yeah,
but clockwork dancing. That's almost main level dancing, right?
No, because those are actually done by actual dancers.
All right, Renato, anything? Soundtrack.
I was just trying to see what Yoko Kano's thoughts on that song was.
I'll go out on a limb and say I thought it was a little bit too long, or that they should have resequenced it.
Which one? Like the soundtrack or a particular track?
The soundtrack total, because it really should have ended with Shooting Star, because that's where the movie ended, and to have it go on with refrain F and the Diamond Crevice. It's just kind of like it should have ended two tracks earlier.
No, fair enough. Of course, I'm kind of biased in several respects. In particular, for it was Shooting Star, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Adrian and I are actually in that track.
Yeah.
Like, with
as the audience, right?
As a 1,000 people audience, they recorded our voices yelling out, you know, for Cheryl, so that's kind of automatic bias there. But yeah, I think,
that's a great song.
The actual Sayonara no Tsubasa track itself, it's come to light that the reason, you know, Kawamori has a credit in the soundtrack notes is because he collaborated with Kano Yoko on it. Mm-hmm. In that he was doing some of the dogfights to fit how she wanted the music, and she was doing the music to fit how he was doing the dogfights. So the reason that it doesn't work as well as a song but works well as a soundtrack piece is because of that collaborative effort, I thought. And also, you know, Nijiro Kumakuma is just... I shouldn't like it as much as I do.
Well, that's exactly how I feel.
It's so catchy.
I feel like I'm singing the
Sammy, the magical girl Sammy spin-off.
Right?
I myself sang it at karaoke the other night, and I am not ashamed to say that.
Can you hit those levels?
I can hit them an octave lower, yeah.
Oh.
Oh, God.
I don't want to sing anymore, that's for sure.
But, yeah, so... No, that song was great, and I heard Megumi do that live last night, which I'll talk about later. But it was just like a scene out of the movie.
We also heard her do it in the Christmas live. Yeah,
she was a little more... Well, it's that thing with the soundtrack, once you've seen it to the movie, it
kind
of changes the second time you see it.
Christmas music.
So,
the Christmas album was awesome.
I
had two very, very good songs at the very least on that album. Songbird being one.
You mean eight very good songs.
Oh, my apologies. So something else that came out relatively recently, and that's something that, Renato, you're the only one of us who picked it up. It's red. It's very red.
Oh!
You might even say it's on fire.
Oh, are we going to talk about that?
Yeah, we are. Well, you are, to be precise.
I am. You see, I wasn't sure about doing this because I don't want to be the only one talking about stupid things. So... Anyway,
how is it stupid? It's like one of the Valks everyone's waited for.
Yeah, and we saw it at Yamato's showroom.
now.
Last.
But why could they do that when they could do a Destroyed Spartan?
Well, they were having issues with the color red on it when we saw it at the Yamato showroom.
Right. The story was that Kawamori had walked in and seen their prototype, their painted prototype, and said, "That's not the color.
Needs more magical girl."
Yamato said to them, "Yes," said to him, "What do you mean it's red?" Basically,
right.
And he said, "Yeah, it's red." And they said, "Well, we watched the remastered DVD, and it's this color." And he said, "Ah, it's that color in the cartoon." But in my head, it's a different type of... they basically made all these different samples and asked the people who were invited to go into the showroom which one was the real red, which one would they prefer to be made. And the other day I bought it, and Gwyn here asked me, "So what color is it?" And I said, "It's red." Because I can't tell it... And today, I still can't tell the difference of between all those... four or five different shades of red that were there at the showroom.
No, there was one that was like a fire brick red, and the other three looked the same. Remember, they were like Pat Labor shoulders painted.
Yeah. At first, I didn't know what they were because I knew they were the lower panels.
Yeah,
of the legs.
Oh yeah, the leg
on the Pat Labor 1:24 scale thing.
Yeah,
and I had to ask the Yamato rep, "Why have you got red Pat Labor legs in your Macro 7 display?" And he said, "Well, these are different samples."
So you're telling me you're legally colorblind?
No, I'm not colorblind.
I'm not
getting
in a car with you ever.
I know the difference between red and green. That's all you need to know, right?
But it's red and blue in Japan.
Oh, sorry. Damn.
No, that's true. Stop.
Yeah, but does that mean that Japanese people can't tell the difference between blue and
green?
Green,
they can, right?
Yeah, it's the same.
Sky and the grass are the same color.
Because, you know, yeah, and also you have to eat your blues.
Yes.
Eat your blues, you'll be being strong. Did you know that?
No, I
don't. Yes, I
was in Australia. You say blues, it's a football team, so that's kind of, yeah. Anyway, so how is the toy?
Broken.
See, this is the first thing you learn about Renato when, how's the toy? Not only is it red, got it, broke it.
It's okay. Red, and it's red, and so
he doesn't
are my fingers.
Say broke it, like as if he broke it. He just says, it's
it,
broken.
It broke, yeah.
It broke.
It broke.
But it's okay, I fixed it. It's a very minor breakage.
Glued the leg back on?
Yeah, glued the leg back on.
How is the leg coming off a minor breakage?
The piece that breaks off is a very, very tiny tab.
Right.
And that's basically the stopper of one of the joints. And without it, one of the leg joints just goes off the rails, technically.
Really?
And so, yeah. I mean, when you get it, you'll see. Also,
when you're talking, no one else will get it.
Yeah, I know. There's loads of YouTube videos. I'll put one up eventually. I want to edit stuff into it.
So did you transform yours with the white gloves? Did you do that?
No, I did not do that. But overall,
yeah,
it's a really, really good toy.
It's
possibly
metallic, right?
Yamato's.
No, it's not, just
most of it.
Plastic.
No. Most of it is plastic, but there are many more die-cast pieces compared to any of Yamato's previous releases.
Okay. No, I think you mean metallic as in painted, right?
Well, no, because wasn't there a metallic 5-valve release earlier on? Or was that, is that the new one?
You
the
mean metallic paint or actual die-cast?
It looks die-cast, yeah.
No. There are die-cast parts
in it.
In it.
Okay.
It's mostly plastic. There's, no, thank you. There's many,
I offered Renato a mint.
I ruined the stealth. I mean.
Right.
There are a lot of die-cast parts, though. So people who want hefty toys, they've got a good one here. And most of the connecting points, they just connect perfectly.
So when you change it, when you transform it, you don't get a spray of little antenna pieces flying off. Like when you played with that STF-1 back at the Yamato showroom, right?
Not so far, no.
Right, good. Because you completely skewered the guy next to you with broken bits of antenna.
Well, you know what the problem about that now is? That I bought the unassembled kit of that thing.
Really?
Yeah, and so I'm going to have little tiny pieces of plastic strewn all over my apartment now.
Great.
Yeah.
We're doing the next podcast at your place.
Okay. You can build it for me.
All right, so is everyone here going to get that thing eventually?
No, I'm getting it. That's for sure.
I'm not really into the toys. I'm more into the books. I do get the model kits sometimes.
Mm-hmm. It's like, I never thought I'd actually want a Fire Valk.
Exactly. But, that's exactly how I feel.
Yeah, it was like the last thing I would ever buy, but when I saw the prototype and everything and just the transformation for it, I mean, it looks a hell of a lot better than the old 19.
So. How much is the Sound Boost set going to
be?
It's 8,000 yen just for the Sound Booster.
8,000 yen just for the Sound Booster.
I'm not getting the Sound
Booster. That's why I don't get the toys.
I'm getting that.
Yeah.
The only problem I can see with it is that they went the Bandai route and used ball joints for the ankles, whereas up to now they've been using ratcheted joints, and I don't know why they used ball joints.
I think on the 160 now it's ball joints.
What 160?
And the new 160 Valks, isn't it?
They're all 160. Which one? VF1?
Yeah, VF1.
No, they're not.
Really?
Yeah, they've got clicks. Yeah, like that. Clicks.
Yeah, clicks.
The problem with that is that the Valk is too heavy. Right, so eventually those ball joints will wear off, and on a couple of people, it already has.
So that's if you take them out of the box, right?
Yeah, well.
You take them out of your box.
There's all these people who
play with them in the bath.
Yeah. There's all these people who don't want to take stuff about.
Get a sandbox and put some water in there and mix it up and just play with them in the mud.
I don't know. To me, it's like an urban legend because every Valk, 148, 160 Yamato, I've never had a broken anything. The worst thing that happened is those stupid.
Look, turn around and look at your display right there. It's behind glass. If you don't touch anything, no, it's not going to break.
First of all, that is not my stuff.
Oh, okay.
Why would you not keep it behind glass? It's expensive.
No, the only problem I ever had was when the 148s, that stupid air brake flap, would just fall.
I never had a problem with that.
Would just fall forward. You just push it back up.
Because
it wasn't broken. It just fell forward.
Yeah. No, I never broke any of the 148s.
All right. Yeah, no, I wouldn't mind picking it up eventually.
What for? And just send it over and... You've got this X gear in there, right?
Right here, yeah.
Take it out, man.
It's 2,100 yen, man. Woohoo!
Yeah.
But, anyways, let's move on.
Oh.
The main topic I want to get
to... Oh, yeah.
Denied. All right,
see you later.
Denied.
See you later.
That was a three-point block. So...
It's Renato's moment in the sun.
The...
We'll move back into the show now.
The main topic I wanted to get into this episode was a lot of the events surrounding the release of the second movie, which I've talked about as much as I can on the forums, but I thought it might be nice to discuss them because there are a few that we had in common. And then moving on to a few very recent events, concerts. The past few weeks have been Macross concert friendly. In a manner of speaking. But look, let's start off with the events surrounding the movie. So on the day the movie came out, there are a heck of a lot of events. So Adrian, we started off in Shinjuku
in the morning,
saw the movie, and then we went to Ikebukuro because there was a promotional event being held at the Sunshine 60
Observatory.
Yeah, so. And that event had started before the movie, but I wasn't particularly interested until the day of the movie. It's like, might as well.
No, you weren't particularly interested in my ass. We all tried the lottery. you were the one that sent me the link.
No. That's the lottery for the event on the day. I mean, the actual observatory itself had been going before the day the movie came out.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, I'm not going all the way up to Ikebukuro to just walk around the observatory.
Yeah, but the thing was, is the day the movie came out, they had an event.
Okay,
which
that's
was a lottery.
Which was held up in the observatory.
Well, yeah, you had to pay to get into the event.
Well, you got into the event, so tell me about that. What was it? This was at, what, what time was it? Mid 1 o'clock?
It's 1:30? No. Like, I went in at 1. It didn't start till 3.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was a really limited event. It was like 400 people, I think, something like that.
I think it was 500.
Okay.
It was 500, and I was like number 3 something.
And I was feeling exhausted at that point, so I just went to the coffee shop and stayed there and like posted on Anime Ski that everybody was posting
Don't get me started. I looked at some of those threads recently, and they're like, from what we've heard, obviously he went with Ranker. No, he obviously went with Cheryl. Oh, he obviously went with Cheryl but lied because he really wanted Ranker. Like, watch the movie first, people.
Yeah.
Please. Anyway.
Yeah.
So anyways, the event was probably the weakest one of all the events that happened.
Right.
Because it was basically 2 hours after, it was like If anything, they got in two showings. Whatever movie theater was showing it by then would only have shown it two times. They had this event, and the people that were there obviously saw the movie before, or they didn't. And you lined up, you go in there, they're selling goods, but the actual event was just the what's his name, the voice actor for Alto,
Nakamura.
Nakajima, Ayando. The Maine was there, and Tom Moore.
Maine was sporting her new, fresh from her Asia tour, short hairdo.
Which you hate.
I don't like her short hairdo.
I don't like Maine. I like listening to her voice.
We'll
while
be right
sings.
Back after this violence.
No, I love her singing voice.
All right.
That's about it.
You don't enjoy hearing her rattle on forever about Taiyaki?
Or the guys in the audience going, "Butcho!"
Oh, God. You know, like, the one thing that I really hate, and they did it at this event, too, I hate it the most, is every stupid...
Nakajima crying?
No, that's kind of cute.
She cried last night.
Yeah. No, it's... Everybody has a birthday, and they gotta give the birthday cake, and everybody's gotta sing the birthday song, and, like, every event, it's somebody's
birthday.
It's, like, Maine's birthday, and they have to bring out the taiyaki. It's like, I'm tired of it. It's like, yes, we've done this the last 3 years running. Can we stop now?
Hmm.
So
Anyways,
the event was just, they came out, Kamori comes out, and they all ask, oh, what'd you think of the movie? Oh, first, how many people saw it? Less than half raised their hand, so nobody can comment.
Keep in mind, sessions had started playing at, what, say, 10 a.m., and this was 1:30.
8 a.m.
8 a.m. We saw it at 8 a.m.
Did we?
Yeah.
So maybe...
Adrenaline, it's a wonderful thing.
So... It was, it was barely just a really low budget event. They just went up on stage. We hope you like the movie. They asked people send in pre-arranged questions, like who is their favorite Frontier character. And of course, half of them said their own character. And some people said other characters.
Deep and meaningful stuff.
Yeah.
That said, the Sunshine 60 displays were pretty amazing, where they had all of the scripts there. They had a lot of the storyboards. They had costumes. They had posters. They had, like, everything.
Yeah.
And just to clarify, this was just the observatory itself. You just walk around.
Right.
And anyone, you know, people were up there to be tourists and just get take in the view. And there are all these... Macross nerds just queued up. I mean, the line to get into, well, this is going to, I'll get to later, but when we went to buy those postcards, there was this huge line, like a 90-minute line to the Macross shop, and I saw a couple of groups of foreign tourists just come by, and they're just kind of pointing, what the elevator to get out's over here, what the hell are all these people lined up for? Saying, well, we're Macross fans, lining up is what we do. There was a lot of stuff on display.
Now, most of it was just regular release merchandise.
But it was cool.
They had some autographs up on the wall as
well. They had the life-size cutouts of the characters.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And next to them they had the signboard of the actual voice actor.
Right.
So
they had a giant, what do you call it? A giant inflatable rankophone.
Right.
Which everyone signed.
Again, for me it was the scripts and the storyboard. That was when I saw those.
The
scripts
had some great covers.
Awesome.
Because they
had preliminary artwork of the main, I don't know what would be the
main scene.
The key scene in that episode.
Yeah.
So, and it was basically what they originally thought it would look like, but it didn't turn out to look like that.
Yeah. No, so
I wish I'd gone to that just for that.
Those were some really interesting sketches.
They had all the bromide sets
out
on display, and collector's cards, and things like that, which were all pretty cool.
And they had a sticker of a 1-to-1, like, VF-29.
On the floor.
YF, which one is it?
It's a YF-29.
YF-29, a sticker of a...
It was on the floor, It was supposedly 1-to-1.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was pretty cool. So, you did your event. We went downstairs... And I had heard from an inside source that after your event, which technically I didn't get into, I managed to sneak my way in the back for about 10 minutes, but they were going to do a meet and greet, they were going to do a greeting, come out on stage and do a little greeting at a session that was being played in Shinjuku. So I came out, jumped on a plane. No, it wasn't Shinjuku, was it?
Ikebukuro. It was Ikebukuro. I was like, what?
Yeah, I went to this other screening, and of course, by the time I got there, there was like 30 minutes left of the movie. I didn't care. I'd seen the movie already at that time. I wasn't trying to catch the whole thing. I was just trying to sneak in to see the cast come out.
And see the attack!
And, you know, I talked to the dudes at the door. I was like, I hear that Kawamori could be coming by. And they're like, how the hell did you know that? And they're like, get your ass in there and stop spreading these rumors. So I go in, and yeah, sure enough, at the end of it, Kawamori and Aya Endo and Nakajima turned up. I'll check my own event report to double check that. And it was obvious. The great thing was the reactions from the audience, because a lot of people, it was their first time to see the movie, because it was still the day of release, and they were told afterwards, you know, please stay in your seats after the credits. And I saw a few familiar faces in the crowd. I knew that they knew what was going on, but there were like some girls to the right, there were a few guys in front of me, and they obviously had no idea. And they're like, wait, what? And then like the minute Kawamori like comes out on stage, like they are cheering, people are up in there, you know, standing up. You know, these two guys were just screaming at each other. The girls on the right, the minute Megumi came out, they were like screaming at the top of their lungs. It was Macross fever at its finest. You know, it was great. As far as the content, you know, thank you for seeing the movie. Here's how I grew as a character. The same, that's probably what they said.
Yeah, things same old, same old.
At yours, you know. So we did that. Also, over in Shinjuku, they had a display set up at Marui 1. I think you saw this more than I did. I only saw the ground floor.
Well, yeah. Well, Marui 1, they were running the Macross, like,
the
special
Oshare,
shop.
The Oshare Macross, right?
Yeah. And they were doing three... There's three things. There's one, just a good shop where you can get all the Macross goods.
Mm-hmm.
There was the... there's a small, like, section on the first floor for Swallowtail,
mm-hmm,
that sells desserts. So they had Macross Frontier themed desserts, like the Open Ranka cake, and but I forgot what the other stuff was. But and then on the floor, it was like the building's like seven floors,
right?
And you know, it's like kind of like pop culture fashion. So there's like loli, goth loli, you know, princess clothing. So different levels, they had different inspired costumes from the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't. They weren't.
They weren't cosplay, but they were pretty much, yeah, fashions based on the costumes.
Yeah, not true representations of what you saw on screen. More of an influence.
Yeah,
except for the alto, like
attack,
was spot on.
Yeah,
that one was spot on. And then on the fourth floor,
right,
they had an exhibit space open for Tengen's new book,
right,
Valkyrie's Second Sortie. Where,
and if you don't have a copy, grab one because it's a terrific book.
Yes.
But so they had that up there.
Yeah, it was just a very small event. Well, it's not really an event space, but a small space where he had some posters up of the artwork that's in the book, and he also had a event scheduled there the following week.
Now, something happened to one of those posters on the wall.
Oh yeah, they did a raffle where if you go and get the book, you buy the book, you get it signed, you have a possible. It's possible to you know, get a little, like, pull a little piece of paper, see if you win the poster, and. Yeah, I won one.
And just to put this in context, these are these huge, like, wooden-backed...
No, it's just a just regular taped-up poster, but...
Oh, were they?
I mean, it's pretty massive. It's, like, 6x4.
So where is it? Is it here?
No, it's in Akihabara.
Oh. You sent me an email with a picture of my friend. It's like, look what I got, and ever the gentleman.
I didn't get the one I thought I won.
I sent you a two-word reply, which was, you suck.
No, I thought I got the one with the Vermilion Squadron flying away from
the
original SDF-1, and I ended up getting... They ended up sending me issue 50 of Macross Chronicles.
Poster, insert poster, yeah.
Which, mm-hmm, that's great, but I was expecting the other one, and it was signed by Tengen, so...
That's pretty awesome.
Pretty nice. So, yeah.
And so, yeah, on the ground floor, they had everything imaginable from... They had Frontier-themed iPhone covers, T-shirts, stickers for your car if you want to do Itasha on your car.
iPad
covers. Oh, yeah, they did. Yeah.
Yeah.
They had everything imaginable. It was pretty crazy as far as merchandise was concerned. In fact, some of the stuff they were selling out of in cinemas was available at that shop, like the Cheryl flag.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I picked up one of those. Yeah, so it was kind of interesting.
Well, you remember in the morning, we get there at 8:30.
Hmm.
We go by the shop. We see all the Macross posters hanging up in the Mario 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to Ikebukuro. We walk by the theater. We see all the movie posters, like, hung on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, oh, yeah, we take a picture next to the poster. We go to the event.
Oh, yeah.
And then after the event, we walk back. And it's like Kyle Mori went and like painted a mustache on every little thing, but it's a signature. Everything that had Macross had a signature.
Just all along that walk in Ikebukuro. And then in Shinjuku as well. And it was... The man went crazy.
He even signed toys that were for sale in the Macross shop.
Yeah.
And the Macross shop wouldn't sell them after that.
I mean... if anyone...
That sucks.
You wouldn't want to... I just had a baby. He'd autographed the kid. It was kind of nuts. He went on this rampage of signing. But it was really awesome. It really made you feel like part of a moment. Because we went in, it was blank. We came out, it was graffitied.
Yeah.
But, so then, a couple of days after...
It's like Banksy, whatever that guy's name is.
A couple of days after, we went down to Namja Town, which is also in Ikebukuro. And Namja Town is actually... in the background of a scene from the Frontier movie.
Yeah.
The second movie.
Except it's Nyanja Town.
Yeah. Well, Namja Town is kind of like a Japanese version of a Chuck E. Cheese.
So it's way bigger, though.
Right? Yeah, it's a lot bigger.
It's two stories.
It kind of reminded me of Pirates of the Caribbean, the ride, actually.
What?
A little bit.
Disney-ish, yes.
Yeah,
but
it's very Disney-ish.
But I would say it's more of a... it's just a crappy little theme place.
They normally they do gyoza, like Chinese style fried dumplings, and
first floor is gyoza, second floor is ice cream and desserts.
Yeah. And it's all done up in these kind of twisted facades of alleyways, and it's really easy to get lost and not be able to get back to the escalators.
Yeah.
And they're doing a Macross Time thing where they themed, I don't know, 20 items in the gyoza section.
25, because you could get a different card with every item.
Okay, but that was across the gyoza and the dessert, though.
Yeah.
Okay, so some, say, 12, 13 gyoza, 12, 13 dessert, and they're all themed and named after Macross Frontier stuff. And the gyoza, I'll be honest, was a little disgusting. I started off with...
The SMS gyoza was good.
With a Ranker microphone meat. Something.
No, that was a Cheryl microphone.
It was a Cheryl mic, yeah. You drew the whip handle. It
was that was just gross.
It was like
rap negi or whatever.
Something. It was pretty nasty. Yeah. And then afterwards, I did get the Ranker microphone, which was a steamed gyoza for the head of the microphone with another one for the handle and a pastry bow on it. And that was pretty disgusting as well. But
the SMS, that was good. That was really good.
You could get... They had a flyer just for the place. Like, this is what is on offer. And it's like an A4 flyer. And for 100 yen, you could take that to one of these little stalls and they just put it through a laminator for you.
Huh.
And that was like a little souvenir, a laminated brochure, which was pretty cool. Then we went upstairs and... The dessert was more successful, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because it's gyoza, dessert, so...
You know. But we went up there, and one thing I'd been noticing throughout this was the amount of cosplayers we had turning up. It was on a Tuesday, I think, we went. I took the day off work from memory. And...
Yeah.
Because we had something on the evening, which we'll get to. And there were more cosplayers than I expected, just considering this is like a, as you said, big-ass Chuck E. Cheese. And what they do is that whenever there's an event on, even when there isn't, the way the interior of the shop's done up, the place is done up, it's great for cosplay pictures because it looks like you're in these tiny alleyways or you've got a European facade behind you. And there are a lot of Macross cosplayers. I saw some Bakano cosplayers, saw some Gintama.
Oh, there was...
cosplayers.
There was a Gintama
there was also
thing
still,
going
still,
on at the same time.
No, Star Driver.
Star Driver, that event. Was like... It was towards the end of that event,
right.
So...
And, you know... Staying in line for dessert with like two altos and a couple of rankers in front of you, it was quite fun. But the desserts were great.
Yeah.
Was there a particular favorite that you guys had in the desserts?
I liked the pineapple cake. That was really good.
You ate it? You shouldn't be here. You should be dead.
No. The pineapple cake is safe.
No.
And
if you get to eat the cake, you're safe.
And then we sang some Fire Bombers, so it's okay.
Pineapple salad is the one that you eat and you die.
Right.
Anything with pineapple?
No.
No, anything with pineapple. That's
the
curse.
No.
We ate pineapple today. pizza.
Pineapple on the pizza.
I avoided that pizza for a reason. Yeah. But, The
Ronka shaved ice was really good.
Clanberry.
The clanberry.
Clanberry parfait.
Clanberry.
The clanberry parfait.
We have grown men eating clanberry parfait.
Yes.
Chibi clan at that.
Yeah.
The most embarrassing thing for me was going up to this relatively cute girl behind the counter and asking for the My Boyfriend's a Pilot ice cream. Someday.
Oh, well, the best one for that was when you got...
She said, oh, Rick.
She didn't.
The best one for that was when you ordered the K Tycoon, like Ronka's
phone, right?
Ronka's phone, like,
and that was a mochi kind of thing.
Yeah,
what was I show you?
And so they had two flavors. There was the green tea flavor, which was the TV version, and there was melon flavor, which was the movie version.
The orange one, right?
And when you ordered it, there were two women working behind there, and as soon as you ordered it, one of them would say "Dakshimete," and then the other one would say "Ginga no Hatemare," and then they would like make it and bring it out for you.
And it looks so cute, but since it's made out of that mochi,
it's
like
a
flap,
bastard
to eat. It was a bastard to eat, and it looked like you were just like ripping the shit apart. Yes. Like you're just like "fuck you, you piece of shit." it's
like, and we've all the things we all wanted to do that to Ranker's phone at some point. It was rather cathartic in a way.
it was a gooey mess in the end.
The Bobby crepe was also good.
Speaking of gooey messes,
sorry, I had to kill a mosquito there.
Nah, good for you.
Hang on, we've been joined by
Peter here. Hi, guys.
He's back.
He's back from the last podcast. Now, unfortunately, this is not a 360 degree mic.
Oh.
So, if you've got any comments, feel free to jump around here and just.
Just
the events from around the movie, and then concerts, and so we're going back a bit. But if there's anything you want to jump in with,
but you should probably.
Oh, did you get the Firebuck?
Firebuck?
No.
Yeah. Well, someone keeps telling me they break. So. Namjoon was fun. Lots of 8 way too much. But then it was that evening that we had an event on.
Yeah.
Now,
this is the one that makes me jealous.
This is the Yoko Kanno fan club event. Now, I've got to put a disclaimer out there. I'm not so active in it at the moment, but I know the organizers of the kind of fan club. Like, it's not an official fan club. It's literally fans who've made a club, and they get together and they perform Kanno music. And they were having their first ever really big get-together with the president of the club on stage, having a talk show.
Well, this kind of thing is popular with other
franchises.
It's not just Yoko Kanno.
No, I've been to one for Yamato.
Yeah. Well, for the old fans, the new fans. But I mean, you got to admit, like the younger generation of otaku fans or fujoshi, there's a lot more. It's a lot more energetic, a lot more fun. It's not just a bunch of guys in their 40s going on 50. You know, just talking about old shit.
And how the diameter for the wheel of the core fighter in this model was 2 millimeters.
You got like a younger group of people that, you know, want to talk and drink and you know, wear hot cosplay stuff. And
but goddamn, did people drink at this event?
Yeah. Oh god. Yes.
It was at Shinjuku Loft Plus One, which is this tiny little event space, which I really love, and I've been there before.
Cheers, Peter.
Oh, Peter has brought beer. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
But first rule of podcasting, never podcast sober. And so they've been... you too.
Yeah.
Let's do a kanpai here, gentlemen.
Kanpai. The beer missiles.
Yes.
So there'd been word that, you know, even though it was a Kanno event, there'd be a lot of, you know, frontier talk, of course, since the movie came out three, four days earlier. And so we turned up, and we knew there were going to be some special guests. We knew Tenjin was going to turn up. And so we're sitting there. We got a pretty good seat. We're maybe,
we chose to sit in the back because we were
taller. Well, it wasn't even the furthest back. They were, like, on the wings. They went way further back on the
wings. Yeah, we weren't up in the front or anything.
No, but, I mean, it was a fine view.
Yeah.
Fine view
of Misty.
We'll get to Misty. There are like half a dozen people, maybe, I'd say, sitting deep between us and the stage. Tiny, tiny little space. And the thing is, the venue makes their money from the food and drinks, so they urge you to keep drinking as you're watching. So, Tenjin got up and he talked a bit.
And there was a representative from Bandai Visual, and he brought one of their new up-and-coming idols, like kind of image idols, a girl called Misty who does like promotions for stuff. And we got her plastered, which was terrific, because she made the mistake. When you get on stage on the microphone, you have to say to the master of the place what you want to drink. And she was drinking, what was it, melon soda and rum?
Rum, melon soda.
Yeah. And we've got a room full of geeks here. The one idol kind of girl on stage has told them what she likes to drink. Next thing you know, bartender comes up, oh, someone bought you this. Next, about 20 minutes later, he comes up, two people have bought you drinks. So at the end, she had like six drinks come up at once, and she was trying to scull them to keep up.
Misty became Misty-eyed.
Oh, very much
so. She was
so
awesome, man.
But, so talking to Tenjin, and you know, the great thing about the night was whenever someone talked about something, invariably, Tenjin had drawn it. It's like,
pretty much, yeah.
It's like the Bandai Visual rep was, look, here is the new case for the aquarium box set, and it's a digipack, and it folds out so you can see the punch, the infinite punch going along the folded out digipack.
Are you sure that's Bandai Visual?
I think
it was Bandai
Aquarium
Visual.
Is Media Factory.
Well, no, Media Factory was there too, because they're working on the...
Aquarium. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Because that's when the Evo announcement just happened, a week before that.
Yeah.
So because it was the Yoko
Kano
event,
they
spoke too.
Yeah.
Media.
Well, but we had a whole bunch of people there.
Yeah. Tenjin does work for all of them.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's like, Tenjin just casually glances over. He's like,
I know you. This is what it was. They also snuck in
the Pat Labors.
No.
They did have those too, though.
No, the Bandai Visual thing with Tenjin was they were talking about the standalone complex, the 3D movie. And they were like, oh, well, this has nothing to do with anything you worked on. And he's like, no, I actually did a voice in that.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, because Tenjin also does voice acting.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guess he goes by a different name, he said.
Well, but no, but he also, half the stuff they held up, like... Someone had brought Misty, brought Shiho, who's the president of the fan club, Pat Labor on the new Blu-ray re-releases, and Tenjin just looks at the covers, I drew them. It's like, Aquarium Pictures, like, yeah, I drew that. Someone comes up with a poster that they'll give me, I worked on that. There wasn't much that he had.
And yet he's still got time to come to all these events.
Right.
Well, he was there as a kind of guest of honor, but then the other guest of honor they had, of course, was Cheer. Chie Kajiura, the singing voice for Mulane.
But Tenjin brought a secret guest.
Well, we'll get to that in a moment. Yeah. But so Chie was there, and she talked a bit. She, joked around a bit. She did three songs. Tenjin was keeping the pace going. She did three songs with an acoustic guitarist. Just boom, right there, which was great. But then, Shiho and Tenjin are like, someone else said they want to drop by. And like, Aya Endor just casually strolls down the stairs. La, 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 la. It's like, yeah, I heard about this event, really want to come. And she did a line reading, a short line reading, but the crowd went crazy.
Which line?
She did Konna Sabisu.
What?
Konna Sabisu.
Konna Sabisu.
And
now you go back.
Yeah.
It's those horrible translations translated as, I never do it on the internet.
What?
Yeah, because they thought that it said, netto ni shinai.
That's almost about as the first fan sub of episode 1 Frontier, where it was
That's what I'm talking about.
The Skaru Squadron.
Oh yeah.
Skaru?
And the Brief
25. SKURU.
Jesus.
And the Brief 25.
Yeah.
What?
Brief
25.
Brief 25.
My
engine blocks are angry at me.
Same thing, right?
Aya came out and it was great. I got to meet Cheer afterwards, buy a concert ticket from her, and she's like, I've heard of you. It's like,
no, that's not how it went. I told you to throw me under the bus on shaking somebody's hand. But coming from a guy. Okay, all right.
I told her who she
was. Oh, first off, you're like.
All right, here we go.
Okay.
It's on.
And the red car.
The gloves are off. The gloves are off.
You're like sitting there going, oh, man. Oh, she's like selling tickets to her gig, but I've already bought two tickets, even though I only need one. So should I buy a third ticket just so I can go talk to her?
Of course. I got to meet... I didn't say how I got to meet her. I got to meet her. But I went up to buy a ticket from her and...
So that's why my ticket was signed. My ticket that I bought from Gwyn was signed
and,
by Chia.
You know, I was like, hi, I'm Gwyn. She's like, who? I'm like, Gwyn. She's like, oh, yeah, I've heard of you.
But you couldn't have just said, hi, I've already bought two tickets to your show.
I didn't say that, no.
I know. You could have just said that. Like, yeah, I already bought two tickets to your show. I just want to say hello, blah, blah, blah. I'm a big fan or I'll follow you or whatever on Twitter. Stalker, and because she has heard of you.
Hey, well, Richard benefited from it. So.
Yeah, no, yeah. I'm happy.
But no, I mean, you went back and forth about should I buy another ticket? Should I? It's like just go over there. Just.
Well, look, this is the thing about Chia. She looks like Sadako from The Ring.
Yeah,
that hair. The only reason I went up to buy the ticket was because she had her hair pulled back with a baseball cap on, which made her seem much more human. But normally,
that would also make her seem much hotter, I'm sure.
But normally I see that hair and I think of her crawling out of my TV in the dark of night. Yeah.
Well, she ain't signing no more ticket for you.
That hair is some hardcore stuff. Anyway, so that was a really cool little event. How many people do you think were there? It was tiny.
It was tiny. It wasn't as full as the
venue
was Megazone.
No, the venue was not full up.
Because I don't think a lot of people knew exactly.
Knew about
what was
it. No, none of the regulars we know from the Macross fan club were there. Not one.
Hmm.
There's the one guy on the far right who I know from Kano Yoko.
Okay. Yeah.
But no one from the Macross fan club. They didn't know because it was a Kano event. But anyway, so that was pretty sweet.
But it had absolutely nothing to do with Yoko Kano. That's what
we ended up talking about Macross the entire night.
I was just everybody talking about the Frontier movie, the prizes were either Standalone Complex Frontier. There was nothing.
Misty got drunk, snapped the handle of her umbrella, and autographed it and gave it away in a prize draw. She was really drunk. But by the 2/3 mark of the event, it was over. It was just drunken garbage from that point.
Yeah, it was just
people were just talking about anything. It got really out of hand.
That sounds pretty cool. Most of the official events aren't anything like that, of course.
Now, fortunately, neither of us really had the Cajulies to go up to Aya.
Yeah.
She walked right past it.
I would.
We know you.
She had security. She had.
I don't care. Puffy had security too, and I went up and talked to them.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
I would have talked to her, but no, I couldn't. I just nah.
But
hi, Puffy.
But then we had the handshake.
Thank you.
Oh, that's a couple weeks later.
Few weeks later, we're moving on. The handshake, and that is back in the Sunshine 60 building at the observatory. They had the final day of that display.
Well, okay, well, first, obviously a lot of people know there was the big earthquake in Japan, which, because of that, a lot of things got cancelled, like Tokyo Anime Fair.
Omnidimensional barrier, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Because of that, Third Impact, whatever you want to call it, Tokyo Anime Fair got cancelled, and so did Ace?
Yeah, Ace
and
got cancelled.
Satellite
well.
was going to have a booth at both events, and that's where they usually sell the creators' illustration
files. Yeah,
and they with those two events being cancelled, they had a stack of books, and they had no way of getting rid of them or selling them off.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like they kind of put together this event on the last day of the Sunshine 60, but then because of the event that happened.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the artists from Frontier created some original.
They did, you know, like some fundraising illustrations.
Yeah, right? They did illustrations that would later go on to be auctioned off for relief funds.
Mm-hmm.
But they took those illustrations and made postcards, so you can buy a set of postcards for 1,000 yen.
That's right.
Talking about the
Kaomori one's a kneeling mech.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then there's the.
Can I say one thing about that?
Yeah.
That I didn't dare to say on Macross World.
Okay. Which is where we post this podcast.
The elbow. I know, but it's okay because time has passed now, and I can say
the elbow joint was backwards.
No, that's something else.
Did you pick the postcard up and the legs got broke?
There's a spelling mistake there.
Really?
Yeah. Kamura wrote ipositu with the tenten on the tu instead of tenten on the su.
Oh wait, you found a spelling mistake in Japanese?
Yes.
Okay, that's valid. Well, that was like...
But it's a good illustration. I couldn't draw better than him, but I think I can write better.
Whereas Risa Ibata wrote, "You'll never walk alone," perfectly.
Yeah.
Well, I showed you the... at the Namja Town. I got the card, and on the back, it's like this old Star Wars poster. You get all the cards, you can make this poster.
Right.
And one of the sections I had actually had the Macross Frontier official logo. Mm-hmm. But the text on it was like Macross Runtier.
Right.
It's like, why don't you just copy the...
I know.
It's like, it was in front of you. You could have just retyped it.
Yeah, I had a similar weird spelling of Macross Runtier. It's like,
you eat too much of this gyoza.
I just have to say, my favorite is in Macross Perfect Memory, where they have the Miss Macross fashion magazine. And instead of guys, it says gays. And you see, Roy, Max, Hikaru, gays.
I was gonna just bring up the first movie in the Shallon Apple.
Mm.
On stage.
Yeah, but that covers them all, though, I think.
Yeah,
gays.
I think gays.
I mean, even combat action is...
Combat action.
So they ended up doing this charity event on the final day of the observatory display. And they were selling these postcards.
Yeah,
and
which we thought we could just, you know, show up an hour late and just get in line. No one's going to come to get these damn things.
I was in touch with some people in the know, and they're like, no one's, you know, just, we're going to be selling them for a 3-hour period. It'll be fine, just turn up. And then I get a text in the morning saying, yeah, it's 7:30 a.m. We don't open until 10. There's people lined up for postcards. I was like, oh, crap. So we turn up, and there's like an hour and a half line. And we didn't know there'd be anything left. They were warning us when we stood in line that, you know, you may stand in line for nothing. We certainly didn't stand in line for nothing.
No. As you were babbling on about, I don't know, Yamato or something, you know, you were going on about, we were doing our typical, the assholes of the industry that come to Japan ever so often. So as we were standing in line, we were talking about what's going on overseas in the anime market. In the U.S.
Or lack of,
or the deterioration of the existing market.
What do you mean? They just bought a new hard drive.
That's
what I heard.
No, are you talking about Harmony Gold's terabyte drives? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
We said the anime industry.
Yeah, besides, Rich, you could give Harmony Gold a 1 meg USB stick. They still wouldn't be able to fill it up with original content. Anyway,
as we were discussing that, and you're going on about something, I said, as you're going on about it,
yeah.
I was like, is that Kawamori, like, coming down the line? And you're like, no, he wouldn't come down the line. Oh, shit, that's Kawamori.
Then I saw the suit jacket, because he was wearing, he wears the sports jacket all
blazing.
The time.
Yeah.
The white, creamy... Kind of
Don Johnson kind of Miami Vice.
It's like you see him in that in the tie. You're like, he thinks he's James Bond, you know.
Yeah.
he's pimping. The man is pimping. Yeah, anyway. Pimping.
So we're trying to figure out like what's going on, and it seems like he's just shaking everybody's hand that took the time to come out to support this whole
charity
event. And we're at the ass end of the line.
We were.
And we're like, our fucking luck. He's going to stop more than midway.
Because the line switchbacked. It switched back like around a hallway. So it's not like the switchback would have kept him following the line. He just walked out of the hallway.
Right.
And the line would have gone around.
Right.
And no, but people were moving up the line as he was moving up it. So there were points where he couldn't keep up with the handshakes because they were like, okay, we can fit the next 50 people into the charity store. And they're moving forward while he's trying to shake hands. thank you. And so we got up to him. We're probably in the last 20 people or so.
Yeah.
I'd say.
They cut the line. They cut him from shaking everyone's hand, I think.
I think so, yeah. He did as many as he could.
So anyways, as he's coming... As he gets closer, we see the person behind him, or the tubs, so to speak, to the Crocky, was Tengen, was behind him shaking everyone's hand as well.
Psychic.
So it's like we're kind of gearing up, like, oh, we get to finally, like, kind of like meet the guy outside of sitting in a chair, like, a couple aisles back.
Yeah.
Not that we got to meet him. We got to shake his hand. So he's coming up, and we're like thinking, I'm thinking, my Japanese is shit. What the hell am I going to say? He's coming up, coming up. And the only thing I could think of is AKB song.
What? What? Yeah.
Oh, this is it.
Yes.
Yes.
You didn't sing it, though, did you?
Dude, I didn't see it.
This is more damning than anything I could write about you.
Yeah, yeah, this is really bad. This is bad.
Oh, man.
Wasn't your entire reason for coming on this podcast today to just try and clear your name about not being able to tell right from left? It's much more incriminating.
Yes!
This is the guy whose name used to be Save Robotech.
Oh, Rick.
Hey, man, don't really care. Things just... Hey, it's kind of...
All right, so
anyways, as I was saying, as he came up, I'm thinking, what the hell am I going to say? Mm-hmm. So I said it in a more masculine way, and I left out the yes. Okay?
But did you do the dance?
No, I didn't.
No.
I don't actually pay dance, attention yeah. to AKB, but I do know the song. Because you
that's
can't
the
go
opposite
anywhere
of
with
most people,
it.
I think, who could probably watch the video on mute and would be happy.
Well, I don't get off on looking at... little girls in bathing
suits. Dudes, Majius Kagakuin, most hilarious show on TV ever. Anyway, yeah.
So anyways, I said that, and thank you. And then Tenji comes up, and it's just like, oh, hey, how's it going, man? It's like, when are we going to hang out again? Yeah, you know, it's like, good, do a helicopter ride? What's going on?
So Kawamura was coming up the line.
So after shaking Kawamura's hand, Tenjin's right behind him, and it's just like normal, talking to you, talking to Renato, just, hey, how's it going?
Hey, you know,
we're going to hang out.
I'm really jealous right now.
Yeah.
Even Tenjin's just like talking to Gwyn and me.
Okay, well
wow.
then, well, then yeah,
dude,
this episode will be...
I'll draw you a Valkyrie next time, how about that?
And I don't have Tenjin's hair.
Tenjin's hair.
I mean, with that hair, he should be a member of Johnny's gym show, really.
Yes.
That's true. He also don't have his wallet that's like, you're fucking big.
I never thought I'd meet Kawamura. It's just it was great, and we went in there, and once we got in to buy our charity stuff, Tenjin was drawing stuff on the whiteboard, showing people how to draw Valks, and he had a group of people around him, his iPad and big magic marker on a whiteboard, drawing this awesome, I'm sure it was a VF1. It's a
29.
Shit, what am I thinking? Yeah. But it was... No. Okay, it was the 29, but it was in the pose of the cover of the first book that the VF1 was. Like.
Yeah, okay.
So the cockpit looked almost identical, except the fins coming out of the side. But, because he obviously doubled back after Kawamori left. So that was unbelievably random and kind of awesome. Didn't expect it to happen. It was worth lining up, that's for sure. Now, something I'll just mention briefly was we also had... no end to events, the Kanshasai, which was the appreciation festival for Macross Frontier, which was it before or after the handshake? Just...
Mm-hmm. After.
After. You wouldn't know... Okay, I got there, and I was expecting, as normal for a Macross event, it was hard to get into, I had no idea what it was going to be, it was at this tiny hall in the middle of nowhere, and I got out there, and there was no cosplayers, there was no merchandise... There were two guys out the front with some highly pimped out Cheryl cars who couldn't get tickets themselves to get in. They just turned up in their Cheryl mobiles, which took them 6 months to design, apparently. And so I got in there, and it was really strict even by Macross standards. They were checking your fan club member IDs at the door. Fan club members only, one ticket each. And the basic idea was that you had the whole cast on stage, and they were going to talk, have a few jokes, have a game. And, going through the lobby to get there, bump shoulders, oh, hey, Tenjin. He's like, hey! And he goes up to the guest of honor area, and I go down to the plebeian seats. And so it was a pretty awesome little event. In the, Kawamori was there, we had Aya Endo, we had Megumi, we had Nakamura, We had...
Luca couldn't make it.
Luca
right?
couldn't make it. The other we had Megumi Nakajima. The other Megumi who does Clan, she couldn't make it, but she appeared via video message. And we had oh god, now I'm blanking on the name. Not Mitsushi Kotono.
Kamiya?
No, female.
Grace?
Grace, yeah.
Oh,
Kikuko Inoue.
Yeah. Damn it. Belle Dandy herself. And I always wanted to see her on stage. And it was a really good little event. You know, they talked a lot about their experience filming and what people thought of the movie. And you know, Megumi was talking about how, you know, when she originally tried out for the role, she was still in high school. And
yeah.
you know, she graduated and went straight into doing this, and how it's defined her life since she became a member of society, pretty much. You know, the other Clan Megumi, her video message, she was dressed up in complete chibi Clan costume, which was awesome. Inoue came on stage dressed pretty much as Grace, and she looked unbelievably great for her age.
Well, she's 17, right?
Well, this is the thing. She has this thing where she has made an artistic decision that she would always spiritually be 17. And this is something she pimps at events. So even though she's, what, late 40s, I think?
17, you mean?
You're right, 17, yeah.
17 and some days, like...
Yeah.
And that was kind of funny, because, you know, Megumi was like, you know... When I was 17 when I started, and she's like, she turns to Megumi, she's like, well, that means that you're older than me now. And that was pretty hilarious. And at one point she ran off, and not Megumi, Inoue, and changed into a ranker costume, like the yellow dress, and said she wanted to like dance the one of the Megumi dances with everyone. And she had one of the ranker dances, she had Megumi teach everyone to dance. And it was kind of bizarre. It was fun, but bizarre. And, you know, Kawamori was talking about stuff, and they had these games with the audience. You got picked out from a draw, and they had like a quiz game. They had a drawing game, which like it's kind of like a game we did when I was a kid called Chinese Whispers, where someone has an image. Well, they can whisper to the first person what the image is supposed to be. That person has to draw it the best they can. Show it to the person next to them. They can't say a word. They have to realize what it is, try to replicate it,
right.
And so on down the line. And then Kawamori judged who had the best picture. And the thing they were supposed to be drawing was Ranka in a 29 doing a ramen delivery. And it was all doing, you know, the staff versus the audience. And the audience was doing really well. The cast was doing good as well. Megumi's little Valk was awesome. But then they got to Inoue, who, instead of drawing a Valkyrie, drew a teddy bear because she's 17.
Okay.
and which messed everyone up. But it was kind of good. And then at the end, the final contest they had was recognize that song. And they played like the first, second, or 0.5 of a second.
Okay.
And there was a buzzer in front of the star, the crew, the cast, and a button in front of the audience. They had to jump up and touch it and say what song it was. There were some mistakes made by the cast, which were pretty, like, there was at least one they didn't do on purpose. And then the last song, like Kawamori had said, look, there's too much of an imbalance on scores. Whoever gets the next song wins. And the song played, and it was Sayonara no Tsubasa. It was completely obvious. The rather portly gentleman, shall I say, from the audience scene, jumped up, hand over the button, and Aya jumps up, hand over the button, and he kind of turns and realizes he's competing against Aya Endo. And he stops with his hand above the button, and she turns and looks at him and starts putting on her Shiro voice. She's like, Yareba? And his face just went blue. He's
right,
just like,
right.
Shiro's taunting me. And in the end, she hung off until he pressed it, because the prize, you know, then they got some, you know, poster sets, and there were prizes where they had iPod shuffles, iPod Nanos, with like a green one from Megumi, like a pink one, I think, from Cheryl, and they had a couple of lines recorded by each of them in the iPod, and they were autographed.
That is cool.
And it's like, you'd never want to even plug that in. That would go on a wall somewhere.
Right.
But it was just everyone saying, you know, thank you, and they talked about the earthquake, and because that had delayed it by several weeks. They gave, you could buy a pencil board which had like everyone's autographs on it, like a plastic thing, and the date on that was all wrong. It was like 2 months earlier.
Of course. Yeah.
So yeah, but no, that was a great little.
So when did they actually hold that event?
I'll check the forums to see when I said they held that event. It was a good 6 weeks back.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, so that was fun. But that brings us to the last 2 weeks, which have given us a bunch of Macross concerts. And guys, this is why you're all here tonight, to talk about some of these concerts. We've had Chie, we've had Fukuyama, and last night I had Megumi. Oh, I like the way that sounds. I had Megumi.
Yeah, she probably wouldn't put it that way.
I hope she doesn't listen to it. Why am I? Yeah. So, okay, let's start with Chie. Who here went to Chie?
I went to Chie. Yes. Chie was awesome.
You were there?
Yeah, I went to Chie.
I went to Chie.
I went to the Milane concert,
which was February.
Yeah,
February.
And that was February. Just kick ass.
Yeah, the early February gig was Chie and Sakurai Tomo.
Yeah,
right.
Doing nothing but Macross songs. Now this was a Chie gig, so yeah. We didn't get much in the way of Macross songs, did we?
Right. We did.
Got two. You got three. We got two.
Yeah.
But
you went on different dates or something?
No. She okay. So she played the show. And she only did, like, what? She did Plastics. She did
Ready Go.
She did Ready Go. And was that it for the Milane songs?
I think so.
Yeah.
And then
having said that, she did a lot of her, you know, good solo stuff.
Yeah, it was mostly her solo stuff with two Kate Bush covers thrown in. Mm. And then afterwards, she was coming to man
The goods table.
But only if you were going to buy something. So,
and everything on that table I pretty much owned.
Right.
Because I'd been to probably 4 Chie concerts in the last 8 months.
So yeah. I stuck around.
Well, no, we would have stuck around, but they made us leave. Cause we
yeah. Oh, okay. They say if you're not buying anything in line to buy something from Chie, then get the hell out. And it was a tiny venue, which...
Right.
So we got out, but while you were waiting in line...
So while I was waiting, she came out with her guitarist, and they did Friends, Jiko Okoite.
Oh, so you guys didn't get to hear that.
No.
Right.
Gwen and Adrian.
Having said that, she did it at the Milane concert with Sakurai Tomo.
Yeah.
So here she did a solo version, which I still...
That's cool.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
So that was...
I like that song, actually.
I never thought... I mean, well, obviously, she... practiced it for the Milane birthday gig and she did it again, but I never thought I'd get to hear it live ever.
Yeah,
because it's one of those songs that's been lost into Macross history. It's like Heart and Soul. I never heard Heart and Soul done live, and even if I do, it will be the Fukuyama only version,
not
the duet, which I want. So this is a similar song, but so you got to hear that. But before that, the venue's tiny.
Yeah.
A few hundred people tops.
Right.
And we were like, what, three people from the front?
Yeah, we were really close this time. It was like the last gig we went to, which I think I liked the one last year better.
Right.
But, what was that? I think David Hinkton on the forums was just kind of like, oh, you guys were so far back, I couldn't tell who you were. And
yet Chie herself on her blog said, I can see you guys.
Right. So yeah, I took a few photos of her this time when we were really close with my phone.
In a Japanese concert, that's a big no-no.
Until the guy next to me like tapped my shoulder and like pointed to me to stop. Chie, when I like after like when she was manning the goods table, of course I got to talk to her and shake her hand and everything. She was too polite, thankfully, to say anything about that. I did tell her that I really would love to have her do a Kate Bush cover EP or something like that. And she said, she was like, yeah, I'd love to, but my English is really bad.
Here's the thing. Those songs, the two covers she did in English, A, she was much more confident than she was last year when she did one Kate Bush song. And she smiled.
During Rubber Band Girl, yeah.
I have never seen her smile when she sings before. If anyone doesn't believe me, go look at some of the Firebomber tribute concerts from 2007 that the DVD has come out for. And she's got this kind of... I don't know if you'd call her a...
Well, she's a little bit queen of darkness, isn't
she? A grouchy hippie or a somewhat melancholy goth.
Yeah.
She's just got this image, and she rarely smiles. And yet she was grinning. She was
right.
Completely.
Well, that's like Rubber Band Girl is like the poppiest song ever. This is why I was surprised that she did it.
Because
It's like of Kate Bush, of all of Kate Bush's songs, it's the one least likely for Chie to cover. But yeah, she did. She and her band nailed it. So I totally understand why she was grinning.
Adrian, what do you think?
Well, I liked hearing the two Macross songs that I got to hear.
Oh, come on. Don't tell me you don't love moody 90s.
I do see where you're coming
from. I'm not
from.
Done yet. Jesus, okay. People. God.
Sorry, I thought your name was Renato.
Jeez.
Hey.
Save the pitchforks for the Fukuyama one. Okay. Yeah, I enjoyed hearing the two Macross 7 songs. And I do enjoy just hearing her music. It's very interesting. It's more along the lines of the music I listen to outside of anime-type music. So, as this a live show, it was good.
This is why I like her. I mean, and it sounds condescending, but I don't mean it that way. It's like, I feel like she grew up listening to all the same albums I did.
Mm. Oh, so. Yeah.
See, that's the difference. I grew up listening to her. So she sounds exactly like the albums right. I grew up listening to.
Well put.
I was a little disappointed we didn't get more Macross songs, especially having done the Milan concert
right.
just a few months earlier. But Chia
well,
songs,
say that's why she
exactly, and Chia songs are always good to groove out to. But there's always that thing like she's done what two albums
right.
and recently three new songs on that
right.
USB stick she's
right.
been selling. There's not like she's done more Milan songs than solo songs.
Right.
So I normally expect there to be more of a balance. But I can understand that she was trying to balance out her previous performance. But her songs always go down well regardless. I mean, they're just good chill-out songs. They always have the atmosphere. Her music stand was on fire throughout the entire concert.
No, she was burning it. Like,
she had incense in the
right.
stand. You know.
So why was the attendance so low, do you think?
I don't think it was low.
I think it was low.
Oh, remember there's two other events going on the same night?
Oh.
That was a very good attempt at a segue. I applaud that. Mm-hmm. no, on the same night they'd planned. Well, there was a Fukuyama gig because that weekend, the Saturday and Sunday were Fukuyama 20th anniversary gigs, and there was a screening, special screening of both of the Frontier movies with some cast guests.
See that,
that
one
was,
I didn't know about.
That
at
was
all.
Fan club.
I didn't know about that until just now.
Fan club members only.
I know.
Sorry, get out. Yeah,
no, that's why people I was expecting. And the thing is, all the people I knew who were fans of Macross but weren't going to the movie screening, I knew they'd be at Cheer on night one.
Well,
and Fukuyama on night
coordination
two.
Coordination there, don't you think?
Communication, yeah. No communication at all. And Cheer didn't know about it first because when she announced the concert, it was like, wait, no. And like, Twitter was kind of melting down. It's like, what are you thinking? She's like, I've heard there's something else on, but it's too late. We're doing it.
No.
And yeah, it was a good gig though. It still filled up. I mean, the crowd.
Yeah, no, it filled up, but I mean, it wasn't like the pictures I saw of the last gig you guys went to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just heads.
Yeah,
but
and
then
like
again,
this one,
yeah.
I mean, I could walk to the bar and come back without having to.
That's
squeeze
true,
by people.
But
yeah.
that's also that was the first one she'd done solo in a long time, like in a year
yeah.
or two, and also that was the only song she did in Tokyo, whereas she'd done. The only gig I think she was doing. She did one off. Whereas this time she'd done a series of gigs. But yeah, so there was that. And then the following night was Fukuyama. Now, I've been.
Which I couldn't go
to
because I was working.
Who went to that, so?
I went to that
one. I went to that too.
And it was a 20th anniversary gig, two nights. Fukuyama had said up front he's not going to sing any songs twice. And it was big for one reason, which I'm going to let Renato get into. Like, when you say 20th anniversary...
This is the 20th anniversary of his debut, right?
Right.
And his original band was a band called Hummingbird. They actually formed in 1988 or 89 or something like that. But they didn't actually bring out their first single until 91. And so that's why 2011 is the 20th.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, the first single was Happy Birthday, the second single was Kanashimi wa Doko Kara, and then after that they brought out this LP. And
and it was a really, really, really good album. And I think I still think it's one of the best albums I own, and I think everyone should get it. Except you can't because it's out of print now.
It's secondhand Amazon sellers are your friend.
Yeah, they're like 4,000 yen. I don't know if people would want to.
Is that for the? I know I bought like 1, 2, 3 for like 500 yen on that.
That's okay. So they brought out three albums. No wait. They brought out two original albums under the NEC Avenue or something like that,
right.
Label. And then Macro 7 happened,
right.
And Fukuyama became the voice, the singing voice of Basara. And then after that, they brought out the album 1, 2, 3, which was the third album,
right.
Technically.
And
then that was from Victor all the way on. So they actually changed recording record companies halfway through.
And the importance of Hummingbird to a Macross fan is that a lot of the stuff they did was repurposed for Macross 7 stuff.
Yeah, from the 1, 2, 3 album onwards.
Right.
Everything before that actually sounds quite different. It's more of a folksy kind of,
mm-hmm.
more raw rock kind of sound. So I really encourage everyone who has the opportunity to go and check it out. If you must, there are downloads available. Go use Google or whatever you need to. There were three members in Hummingbird originally. It was Fukuyama and this guy called Toshiyuki Furuya and this other guy called Shoichiro Aso, who was the drummer.
Aso is still with him, right?
Aso is still with the Fukuyama
band,
which
band.
Is a it's a 4-piece band now.
It's like Fukuyama, Ponchan. Ponchan's the keyboard.
Ponchan. His name is Akira.
His
something,
name is
right?
Ponchan. We call him Ponchan.
I apologize.
Who's the guitarist? Hiroshi?
The guitarist Tetsuro Morita.
Yeah, that's right.
And
who's going off on his own?
The bassist,
now?
You mean? Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a solo career going down.
Actually,
you know,
they all have.
Even Ponchan.
Even Ponchan has his own album. He was selling it there, but
was he?
And they even asked. So how many people have bought it? And like 5 people put their hand up, and they're like, oh, competing with Tetsuro. More people bought Tetsuro's album than they did. Yes.
Fair enough.
Even Aso has his own album.
That I can imagine.
Yeah.
But so this was them together for the first time in what? 10 years?
Hummingbird. Yeah, Hummingbird. The missing member basically was Furuya, and he'd been out of the picture since since 2000,
mm-hmm.
That was when they broke up, and basically the whole thing was that they just had a major falling out over in which direction to take the band. So he, they basically broke up in 2000, Furuya and, Fukuyama basically didn't see eye to eye, and after a while, it was in 2003 that Fukuyama brought out his first album, and by then he had, convinced Aso to be his drummer,
mm-hmm.
And the rest is history, basically. They just kept on doing it.
So this was the 20th anniversary gig. So
yeah. But I just want to mention the repurposing of Hummingbird
songs.
Tracks as...
Right.
There was something about that, because they basically were brought out at the same time. The Hummingbird album, the 1, 2, 3 album, basically the third album, the first Victor album, and the Let's Fire albums and all those other Fire Bomber albums, more or less came out at around the same time.
Okay.
So... the general belief is that they were originally Hummingbird songs, which were rewritten and rearranged to fit Macro 7. But it was like, for example, My Soul for You was written for Macro 7, but it was still written composed by Fukuyama for that. And the
like
same with Power to the Dream. Right. Mala Maniausa became Power to the
Dream.
But Mala Maniausa was a Hummingbird song which was written for Macro 7 to begin with.
So the they changed it,
right?
Even though, Fukuyama and his wife, because his wife is the one who actually writes most of the lyrics.
And how does she live with that hair? That's the question.
Well, maybe she doesn't have that much of her own.
I saw him in a documentary the other day, perming. Like he had the perming wand in the backstage, doing the hair up because it's not normally that.
Is this a Fukuyama documentary?
It's in the back of one of I think 2005 or 2007 concert discs.
Is it?
I was like, I'll have to check he's got a curling wand, bastard.
Curling iron.
Anyway,
Even Fly Away, right? Fly Away became Try Again.
Yeah.
Fly Away, you know, it's got all those in the original. It's got all those lyrics like "Tatakai ga tsuzukeru sora" or something.
Yeah.
Which is the battle continues in the sky, and you know, that is obviously written for Macro 7, but then they still changed.
It's like my daily commute. I don't know about you guys.
You fly in a Valkyrie, riding in my Valkyrie. That's from Macro 2. So anyway,
or Macro 7.
Yes. Oh god, jamming bards, and it all comes right back to Hummingbird.
Yes.
So yeah, they were kind of repurposed, but Fukuyama never really found out why his lyrics were changed.
Really?
Yeah,
even though he's the one singing them.
I mean, they were changed, and they were written by his wife, originally, for Macro 7, but then they turned around and said, okay, well, for the Firebomber version, we want you to change these lines to this, and sing this like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, I guess he just accepted it, because he had to do most of the songs on one day, in one take.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there were most of the songs, like, whatever, I don't know, maybe Toxic Love Heart and things like that, were all songs that he'd never even heard before the actual recording date. He spelled them off and then
he did a good
went
job.
Home. Yeah.
Well, this concert, I'll say one thing. I was a little disappointed, I've got to say, by the lack of Macro songs. And that's just by the general concept of a 20th anniversary Fukuyama concert, you think, well, Firebomber has been such a huge part of his career. I mean, it's completely different to say, like, Jam Project. I wasn't expecting him to come on and do 20 Jam Project songs, but yeah, you know, because of the links with Hummingbird, I was expecting more Macross stuff. And I think on each night, apparently, there was like two Macross songs.
Well, the first night had My Soul. My Soul for You.
My Soul
for You. It also had... I don't remember, because I wasn't there, right? Because I only checked the song list.
Burning Fire?
Did it have that?
Yeah, I think it was Burning
Fire. I went to the wrong game.
Either way, either way, they had more Macro 7 songs.
You've heard Burning Fire done live, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it goes off.
Yes, it does.
Damn, it's a good song live. Yeah.
But I had no problems with that, because I'd already been to two Firebombs concerts,
right,
and it's enough for me.
Well,
but I never heard Hummingbird live, because they broke up just before I came to Japan.
Right. And I can see where you're coming from. I mean, I have not owned a Hummingbird album in a long time, but I used to own their Best Of CD before a friend's CD player ate it. I therefore took apart said friend's CD player with a chisel and a hammer, hence I'm using the term friend in a past tense. I was recognising a lot of the songs as they belted them out. It's like, oh, I remember this, you know, but those were good. A lot of the stuff from his new album I was hoping to hear was done the first night, unfortunately.
That's right,
Which is a shame. But then again, they're putting all this apparently onto a DVD.
Which is going to be like...
Two
how
discs.
Many... it's going to be much more than that.
Well, the thing is, he apologized. He's like, we're going to try and get everything in. And we did that for Long Long Live as well. And the compression made it ass-tastic. And I apologize for the... He actually apologized.
It wasn't even just that. It was... I don't know if you've ever seen that DVD.
Only
but
bits of it. It's too
well,
expensive.
They've
it's
cut out songs in the middle.
Right.
And that's really what people got pissed off about.
Yeah. I know the quality wasn't great, though, either. Like, from what I've seen.
The quality was horrible,
right,
first of all. Because it
was
all filmed... But no, that was filmed in with handycams.
Right. But you were saying that you thought he was actually healthier, more energetic, like...
Oh, absolutely. I had never seen him perform this well, ever. Or for this long, with such constant...
vocals.
Yeah, vocals, even, like, playing consistently well.
Mm-hmm.
And this is even, like, his second night, right?
Yeah.
Second
and he
night,
went for
pretty
what,
much
like
4-hour
Yeah,
concert.
Almost 4 hours each night, wasn't it? Something
it
like
was,
that.
Yeah.
3.5 to 4 hours each night, two nights in a row.
Because if you go back and look at that DVD that we were just talking about just now, the Long Live one,
yeah,
that was called Long Long Life because that was the first time he'd ever done an almost 4 hour concert, and he's pretty much dying by the end of it. He is not able to sing any note on pitch. He's not even able to stand up. Sometimes you see him like falling over or whatever. It's still a pretty good performance, but yeah, towards the end, it's like, you know, he's just gonna go and collapse. But so he wasn't like that at all. He could have gone on for another couple of hours.
Yeah, no, he was definitely in fine form, lack of Macross songs or not. It was a good concert to rock out to, I thought. I mean,
yeah.
Adrian, you've been pretty quiet this whole time.
I was kind of bored.
God damn you.
I mean,
this
like,
may be your office and everything, but I'm kicking you out right now.
I like his songs, whether his solo stuff, but I was expecting Macross songs, not the Hummingbird versions of the originals.
Again, I thought it was
so
cool to be able to
watch Macross 7.
So
okay.
I've watched it. I've done my time. And, yeah, so for me...
Don't worry, I'll find out when Hiroko... Wait, what's her name? Hiroko Ku...
Oh, the Heart and Soul?
No, the Ishtar.
Kasahara.
Kasahara. I'll find out when she's playing, and I'll... Like
I check her blog. I never catch.
She has a newer blog now.
She switched from Blue Room. Yeah.
She was doing concerts every Christmas Eve, I think, for a while, but I think she stopped that.
Yeah.
Do you think she does Macross 2 songs every concert?
I doubt it.
She does Moichi to Love. I think that's it.
That would be pretty sweet.
That's a good song. That's a good song.
So
yeah. So anyway, Hummingbird is
bored.
The best.
Yeah, I mean. From the time it started to the time it ended, I was already actually tired from the night before because we went to a party after TA.
Right.
And then I had a shit night of sleep or whatever. Something happened. And
that was a really good party too, except for the fat chick who was coming on to all of us.
Moving on.
What party is this?
Moving on.
Not me, thank God. Anyways, I was pretty tired when I got to the show. I was just kind of tired waiting.
You were
for
fashionably late.
Yeah, I was fashionably late. Oh, that's why we had an event, Mega Hobby Expo.
Yeah.
So
you have to be up at like 5 a.m.
Yeah, I got up at 5 a.m., stood in line in the sun, and then by the time I got there, I was exhausted. So that was a little bit of it, but for the most part, there wasn't anything familiar for me at all.
I guess you had to have been a fan. And
yeah, well, see, I've got this middle ground between you two, where I wanted more Macross, but I knew some of the Hummingbird stuff.
Okay.
And I knew his original, his own solo stuff, of course.
Yeah.
But, no, it was good, and I will probably still pick up the DVD.
I will pick it up the day it comes out. And
it's a shame we didn't get Dreamjack, although that was night one.
That was night one, yeah.
I want that. I want to hear that live.
But you keep confusing...
Dreamjack
and something else. Riding in the Night.
Yeah.
Riding in the Night is the one that goes... And Dreamjack is not that one. Think of it right now, damn it.
It's called Dreamjack.
It's called Dreamjack.
Kono Sekai-e. Or Ano Sekai-e.
Kono Sekai-de.
I have that album back.
Because
that's the one with Dynamite Explosion on it.
It is, yeah. Unsweet.
Yeah, I have that album back.
Well, that was the last album that I mean.
Alright, and there's two more Fukuyama gigs coming up this year. There's two acoustic lives.
I don't know if I'll go to those.
One in summer, one in autumn. And I'll probably go to both just because I don't care what he does.
Fukuyama
acoustic, that could be
acoustic
great.
Stuff is good. Sometimes he does covers.
And then as far as Macross related gigs go, there's Mariijima's stuff.
Which
the end of July.
May not be as Macross related as we hope.
No, because there was that whole thing with her with, what was it, the
LA Weekly.
Where she was pointed out, where she had a headline saying she was an anime idol. I didn't say that. But yeah, so the last event for me to just...
Don't kill the messenger.
This has been an epic undertaking, kind of recounting all these events. And half of them I haven't given half of the discussion time I wanted to, but last night... was Megumi Nakajima's summer tour, and it was held at Ebisu at this, I'm going to call it tiny, you're going to disagree with me,
I disagree with you,
it called venue called the Liquid Room, and it was over capacity. It was ridiculous. Didn't she do her first DVD from there?
Probably,
because I know of it before, but basically, I would say they could have fit, and I'll have to check the website for the venue, but they should have been able to fit maybe 900 to 1,000 in there, and they had probably 1,200. And, like, I was so far up the back, and I was only, like, number 734, so there were a good 400 or 500 people. I don't know where they were, because I was so far up the back, it was ridiculous. There's one of those things where there's so many people in front of you. When they move, they open up the tunnel of vision through to the stage.
Hmm.
And I'd be able to see her for a couple of minutes, but then people would start bopping their heads
and
I'd lose the view.
Right. Yeah.
And, but having said that, the sound quality was great. And the minute I found out I was going to be up the back, I made sure I had an armrest on the mixer's counter, where one of the guys doing the sound mixing.
Okay.
And I reached out with the other arm to the bar, grabbed two beers and a box of peanuts, shoved them on there, and I just completely... drank throughout the entire gig, which is good. But there was, you know, I ran into two of the Japanese Macross fans beforehand in the lobby, and they're like, why are you here? She's not going to be doing Macross songs.
Yeah.
And I immediately said, as politely as possible,
I'm here to see her thighs.
And after I said that, I said, well, you're on drugs, because the movie has come out.
How do you say that in Japanese?
Something like that. And of course she's going to do some, but it's her gig. I'm not expecting all Macross songs.
Yeah.
It turned out to be a good 50-50 mix.
Yeah.
The time.
Oh, really?
And so she did one. She did all her songs from the new movie.
Mm-hmm.
Of course she did Nijiro no Kuma Kuma as well.
Right.
And that, with everyone in the pit in front with the glow sticks, it was awfully like a movie concert scene.
Oh,
it was really good, because everyone was singing along
and shouting out Open Ronka.
Yes. Yes, it was great. She did all the standby, you know, Frontier standards as well.
Okay.
Yeah,
you know, Anata no Oto and all that stuff. Her solo stuff, she did mostly her solo songs I like, which is normally stuff from other anime, because the stuff she does herself, which is not anime related, is a little music-ish at times. It's pretty flavorless. But she did... I enjoyed 85-90% of the songs at the gig, and, you know, 50% of the songs overall were Macross Frontier. She did Aimo, but she did a cappella version. No musical backing at all.
Huh.
Just her on a mic doing the short version.
So it was like when she did voices at the Yoko Kanno concert.
Yes, yeah. At the very end, she also did Hoshikira.
Okay.
And she broke down crying in the middle of it and completely kind of messed it up. Apparently, she found out after the movie that Kanno had written that song with her in mind. Not as in, this is a Ranka song. She was like, this is composed in the best way it's going to fit Megumi's voice.
Hmm.
And she found out relatively recently, apparently, about this. And she was recounting the story on stage, and she just kind of started...
Yeah.
The waterworks just came out, you know.
If Yoko Kanno composed a song specifically for your vocal strengths, you'd probably break down, too.
It would be a one-note song. but...
I'll still buy it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so overall it was a good gig, and there was at least 4 cameras there, and while Megumi didn't say it herself, there was a warning that we may be recorded, so there'll be a DVD of this one out. It's been 2 years since her first solo DVD, so there'll be a DVD of this for sure. She handles the crowd so much better than Main does. Main's going for a mainstream kind of appeal, or she tries, she thinks she is. Megumi is just like, I'm an idol, I know it, I'm going to have the otaku eating out of the palm of my hand. And as always at her concerts, she'll get everyone pumped up, she'll go into a bit of a talk, she'll be like, so my next concert, in this case, is going to be the 11th of December. It's a Christmas concert, but we can have Christmas a few weeks early, and you're going to come, right? And at this point, everyone had just come off singing Kuma Kuma or something. And like, of course we are. Oh, and by the way, I'm finally starting my own fan club. It's only 5,000 yen to join. You can join in the lobby on the way out. Yay! And of course, on the way out, there's this line of guys just lined up to sign up for
a
fan club.
But here's a question: do you think she is the new incarnation of Mari Ijima?
Does she?
Well, Mari's not dead.
I mean,
Treading into some very dangerous ground right now.
Yeah, I'm trying to see how to phrase this properly. I'm typecast, people only want to see me as Ranker.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that, because I got a friend at my office who I took to a Megumi concert once, and he reckons that's exactly what's going to happen. He's just like, something about her personality that...
I was reading the kind of to and fro that they had with each other, Ranka and... no, shit.
Oh!
See, it's already starting, man!
reality, Megumi, come back to us.
Megumi and Mari and had a kind of...
at the crossover?
A crosstalk at the... in the crossover...
Right.
Pamphlet.
Okay.
There was a crossover live concert a couple of years ago. There was an interview with them, and they were basically just talking with each other about that.
Okay.
So
see, this thing, I don't think she will, because she's embracing her role.
She embraced her role as well, Mary.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Not as one character. And whereas
I think we're talking about like 1985.
Yeah,
or
you
six.
Go back to 1985. Mari was on mainstream television shows in Japan.
With
because,
two of it.
Yeah. Where Megumi is on like a show at 2 a.m.
Yeah, no, I know where you're coming from, but no, Megumi's kind of completely accepted her role as an idol, and she's tailoring her performances to those strengths.
But being an idol is not the same as being Ranka.
But okay, she's not just being an idol, she's also picked up the voice acting. She's doing plenty of other roles in other anime. She's keeping that alive. She's doing songs for other anime, and when she knows the fans want, she'll do her Macross stuff. And within the Macross fandom, she is the person who does the old songs. She's the one, she's done voices, she's done Tenshi no Enogu. She's, you know, she's covered the older Mari stuff.
Right.
So
yeah, you're right.
I think both within Macross fandom and as an artist, she seems comfortable within her anime niche. It's a niche she panders to and plays to well.
Well, Main seems to be
trying to break out of that.
But she's doing a lot of anime theme songs.
But she has Asian tour.
Right, yeah, that's right. She's playing in Singapore.
Which is apparently a tour.
She also did that theme tune for the live action movie. So
right.
She's breaking up.
Right.
Yeah.
Which
and
can't
well, plus you've got to ask yourself this: Main filled the Budokan.
Mm-hmm.
Would Megumi fill the Budokan?
Yeah.
You think?
Macross Frontier fans go there. Yeah,
but no, Main wasn't
everyone
doing.
The Budokan really hasn't been a big deal since.
It's a big deal. It's
it
still
used
a big
to
deal.
Be, yeah, but it's not. I mean.
You
want to
make a statement, say you're popular, you do the Budokan, and Main, with an only a 50-50 Macross original mix, filled the Budokan. Whereas, I don't think Megumi has enough non-Macross hits to pull that off. To go back to Megumi, it was a great concert. I enjoyed it more than I expected, despite having a really terrible view. And I know there'll be a DVD out for it. So that brings a close a discussion of a heck of a lot of events. And you know, when talking about Macrosses, when I talk about anything, the key word I like to bring to it is context. As you guys know, I suck at details. I get my VFs and my YFs mixed up. I'm terrible.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I'm kind of infamous for forgetting my own birthday at least 2 years running. I'm not good with details. But the one thing when we're discussing something like Macross is, and the reason I like doing the podcast, is to bring home to people the fact that it's not something that was broadcast and finished. It's an ongoing popular entity. And there are fans are making stuff. I have yet to put up my epic Christmas article because I've been busy editing goddamn podcasts, but you know, six Macross events within a week over the Christmas period. I mean, this is very much a franchise that's alive, that the fandom is active in, that the creators are active in.
Yeah.
And if we can bring that context to the fans, no matter how rambling or semi-drunk we may seem, or maybe I'm just speaking for myself here.
No, you're not.
No, we can go a lot further.
Yeah, mission accomplished. And to anyone who's still listening to us, thank you very much for sticking with us for
thank
this
you.
Long. If you're ever in the neighborhood, let us know in advance.
Wait,
who knows? Maybe
wait,
there'll be a concert.
Hold
on.
That thought. The hint to the 30th.
You want me to mention that? Okay.
Ooh, there was a hint?
There is a hint.
Okay.
There is a hint. On the F-Tummer, the Macross fan club homepage, they renewed it. They completely redid the site.
Yep. They got rid of that god-awful
the
intro, flash intro.
With the 20, the frontier
Galaxy,
that you'd have
frontier.
To click on. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's event news coming soon and 30th anniversary to be revealed. Like, sections on the website. So, I cannot, in all honesty, claim that I think we'd even get an OVA for the 30th anniversary. I think the team, the Macross guys, are just exhausted, and they've got a Blu-ray to make for the new movie, and that, you know, there'll be edits involved in that. I think they're probably talking about an event of some description, possibly a second crossover, who knows. But it's the 30th anniversary, they're going to try to milk it, of course, especially on the wave of the current popularity. But something is in the works, they haven't forgotten it, because I know when Tengen launched second sortie, there was a talk show, and someone at the front's like, so the 30th anniversary is coming up, any plans? And he just looked at him, he's like, the movie's been out for 2 days. I just finished making a movie.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
Yeah.
I'd be happy if they just came out with like some kind of flashback 2012-ish
Nyan Nyan Creed 2,
like kind of like that, but like maybe for everything, you know, just make some music videos for like all of the different Macross shows.
Yeah.
Put it all together, sell it, I'd buy it.
I would like, and this has not necessarily got anything to do with 30th anniversary, but a Blu-ray remaster of either Do You Remember Love or the original series, and I think that would fit in perfectly well with the 30th anniversary theme, and would
and
require
we could make it in 3D.
Oh yeah, that's what I was going to say. People on the forums are going, yeah, they should make it in 3D.
Well, it would be far less work than animating an, you know, an original OVA,
right?
Which would be original OVA and original video animation.
Still, lots of people think that they're going to reanimate
the entire original series
as Macross the First,
right?
Just like all the stuff in the pachinko machines, and
right? Yeah,
which is gorgeous. I wish they'd release that on Blu-ray.
Well, maybe they'll do like
Keith. Please be quiet about this. Stop talking about it.
That's his answer.
Maybe they'll release the DVD like they did for the 20th anniversary. It's just a compilation of different
footage.
That'd be okay too.
And maybe it'll have the pachinko footage.
Yeah, no,
that
would be nice.
Play the game.
Yeah. That would be very sweet. Because that DVD had all the PlayStation 1 and 2 openings on. That was sweet. It was really good. Anyway, so something is coming. So Macross is continuing.
Bomba.
Yeah.
Macross will continue in the future.
Yes.
So on that note, thank you for listening, and this is the Macross Speaker Podcast. Finally, folding out.
Folding out.
Episode 2.
Oh, we didn't mention your...
No, I'm still going. So this is the Macross Speaker Podcast. Finally, folding out.
Episode 2. Listen to us brag.